pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Chair, I move we approve the accounts payable, and that would be cycle date 7/15 through 7/19, and include the regular accounts payable checks of $705,929.21. The payroll checks, including the wires that are associated with them for the IRS and state income taxes, total of that would be $738,876.72. Total warrants approved, $1,444,805.93. Noting that the county manager was reviewed and approved such.
Second.
Other discussion, items of note?
Yes. Most of the payments were to the for the distribution of our dedicated mill levies for developmental disabilities and also the Museum and Heritage Fund tax. And also we had distribution of the second quarter road levy property taxes to the four municipalities. And also we had a payment to the City of Steamboat Springs, and this is for county portion of the CLEF project and also county portion the county cost for the comm center. The total was $352,604.27 for that project. If you have any, and I have listed out, if you have any questions about any specific items, I have a list of NB5, comm center, but projects getting done, and Commissioner Cargan can report on report that we just got this morning, if you'd like. Or we got yesterday, actually.
Right now?
No.
I don't have any questions.
No.
All right. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So we had our work session yesterday. Oh, my gosh. This giant agenda is really making things rough on me over here. We had, I got it, thank you. We had updates from the county manager, from legal, from the clerk and recorder's office, the treasurer, the airport, public health. The deputy county manager.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve consent agenda items A, B, C, D, E, F, and G.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Turn their microphones back on. Just flip that. We'll switch up. Yep. Thank you. Did I already swear you in?
Nope.
Okay. I didn't think so. As required by statute, the Board of County Commissioners is sitting today as the County Board of Equalization. We are ready to hear the appeal for schedule number R3526561. The first order of business is the swearing in of the petitioner. I'll note the petitioner is not currently present. And we'll swear in the assessor as well. Deanna, you have Ryan's name here for your record. Okay, great. Do you swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I do.
Thank you. I'll make a few introductory comments regarding the proceeding. The issue of today's proceeding is property valuation and or classification for assessment purposes, not property taxes. No discussion of taxes will be allowed. The assessor's office must produce information to support the basis and amount of the assessor's valuation of the property or classification if that is what is being contested. Where the comparable sales method is used, state statute provides that the assessor will determine value based on sales during the 18-month period ending June 30th, 2018. Sales may also be considered in 6-month increments immediately preceding the 18-month period up to 5 years if there are sufficient sales to obtain accurate comparable valuation data. Smaller counties commonly use a 24-month period in order to obtain sufficient comparable sales data that better demonstrates the change in value from the prior level of value, June 30th, 2016. The 24-month period also eliminates seasonality from the sales data. Route County uses a 24-month data collection period. The petitioner and the assessor should not discuss sales post June 30th, 2018, except in cases where it can be demonstrated that a contract for sale was completed prior to June 30th, 2018 and closed after June 30th, 2018, according to the original contract. Under Colorado law, the present value of the property cannot be considered. The petitioner is invited to present his or her evidence first and have the opportunity to cross-examine the representatives from the assessor's office after they have presented their evidence. The decision of the board may be appealed, and we will refer to that after the decision or motion has been made.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I think I know the answer to this question, but I'd like to ask it anyway.
Absolutely.
Given the fact that the petitioner is not here...
I'm Peltier.
Please come join us.
Sorry.
Yep.
Well, there we go.
No problem.
I had to come over from Grand Lake, and it's like a one-lane road on rabbit ears.
So,
and
no problem. We're on a tight schedule, so we just keep
thank
moving
you for,
around here.
Yeah, thank you for
absolutely. I will swear him in. No problem. Thank you for joining us. So I have just reviewed some information, and I guess probably I should review that again for the benefit of the petitioner. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we're going to hear your appeal, which is schedule number R352656-1. The first order of business is that you as the petitioner will be sworn in. The assessor's office has already been sworn in. So if you would raise your hand, do you swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
Thank you. And I'm just going to, we have some introductory comments just to make you aware of the proceeding. So the issue of today's proceeding is property valuation and or classification for assessment purposes, not property taxes. We will not discuss property taxes today. The assessor's office must produce information to support the basis and amount of the assessor's valuation of the property or classification if that's what's being contested. Where the comparable sales method is used, state statute provides that the assessor will determine value based on sales during the 18-month period ending June 30th, 2018. Sales may also be considered in 6-month increments immediately preceding the 18-month period up to 5 years. If there are insufficient sales to obtain accurate comparable valuation data. Smaller counties commonly use a 24-month period in order to obtain sufficient comparable sales data that better demonstrates the change in value from the prior level of value, June 30th, 2016. The 24-month period also eliminates seasonality from the sales data. Route County uses a 24-month data collection period. The petitioner and the assessor should not discuss sales post June 30th, 2018, except in cases when it can be demonstrated that a contract for sale was completed prior to June 30th, 2018 and closed after June 30th, 2018, according to the original contract. Under Colorado law, the present value of your property cannot be considered. So you'll be invited to present your evidence first, and then you'll have the opportunity to cross-examine the representatives from the assessor's office after they've presented their evidence. The decision of the board may be appealed, and I'll refer to that after the decision has been made. Do you have any exhibits that you wish the board to consider?
I have. Everything that I had was submitted online.
Okay.
I should have it.
Yep.
I don't have anything.
We do have those. So you don't have anything in addition?
No.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Do we need to answer your question?
No.
Commissioner Horan? Okay. Thank you.
My question was, would it be appropriate to table this discussion? But now the
petitioner's here, so we won't worry about that.
It was a frantic rush getting here.
It's no problem.
Steamboat in the summer, you know. There's RVs and people on vacation, and nobody's in a real big hurry.
So before we start,
yes,
Madam Chair,
please.
I'd like to disclose that I leased the property that's adjacent to Mr. Peltier's property, and I don't believe that will affect my decision and arrest, so I'll go from there.
Okay. I'm in support of you participating in the hearing.
I am, too. I don't see any reason that you're conflicted.
Thank you very much. All right, Mr. Peltier, we'll have you present your evidence first.
Well, so what I'm thinking is I moved. I've been in the same house for 20 years down in Denver, and I moved. And I don't know if we forwarded the address. We didn't change the address, or I didn't, for Route County. So occasionally Route County will send a request for a lease, and I'll send in an agricultural lease. I think maybe that might have happened this time. I didn't get anything. You know, all I got was the notice of valuation had changed. It had gone up by, you know, that amount. We're not supposed to discuss that amount, I guess. But
actually, the valuation.
We're discussing, yes, we are discussing the valuation.
Well, it went from like $16,000 to $960,000.
Okay.
You know, it's the land is agricultural land. That's really all it's good for. It's above the rim rock. You can't get to it from 40. And we've got a little, we finally got an easement through 52, off 52 through the Cruz property. So you can get up there with like a, you know, a tractor or something like that, but you can't drive a car up there. And so it was leased forever to Hammond, Ralph Hammond, and then Camaletti. And then we wanted to fence the north half because everything's grazing in there for free, you know. So we fenced off that north half, and we're trying to get alfalfa to grow in there. But it's not easy to get alfalfa established in there. That's what we want to do. Like a dozer is like $4,000 a week just to clear. It's real rocky and bushy in there. So we want to get more alfalfa in there. But we just haven't had the chance, you know, Mother Nature hasn't participated, hasn't really helped until this year. So we hope to get more and more in as the years go by, but we only have like 10 acres in, 15 acres in right now. We want to get another 20 in this year for sure. And so, you know, that's my argument. I mean, that's been in the family for like 120 years or something, so... you know, our entire income on it's $6,000 a year.
Great.
So we'd have to sell it. We don't reasonably keep it.
Thank you.
We just couldn't, you know, pay the taxes on it. So.
Unless you have clarifying questions, I'll invite the assessor's office too. This is maybe our next step.
Hello.
Apologies for the
No worries.
Okay, well, if you want to just hang on, we're the hearing before you, so we'll let you in a little bit, Anthony. So you can just stay on. I don't know how to put you on hold, so I'm just going to...
You can listen to what's going on here. I don't
heard anything. Stephanie will be calling in too. She's working. She's got all the information that she submitted to you guys, just so you know, if there's one other person calling in on the case.
Okay.
Let's carry on.
Yes, sorry for that interruption.
So I don't have any questions of the petitioner at this time.
Okay.
So I have a couple of questions. So and I know the lawsuit that you guys were in and settled up with in the road. So how the alfalfa production? And then I guess the question for the assessors is that hunting doesn't qualify you as ag classification.
Does not
by
hunting
itself.
Is not an ag.
And okay.
So, and again, I guess my question to you, Mr. Peltier, is I mean, even the planting of the alfalfa, what's the purpose of the alfalfa?
Well, I'm thinking the alfalfa can be more profitable than the grazing. So the grazing was with Camaletti and Hammond.
Right, yeah.
And it was $1,300 a year.
So how are you going to get it off? Either off the rim rocks or down the new road.
We get it down the new road.
You're able to get it down off the new road?
We feel like we can.
Okay.
We just got to get more put in, you know.
No, I don't know. Those guys. I know the roads. So.
Those guys won't come up with the $4,000, you know, for the dozer. I do that. And then we hope to split it all.
So yeah. Let's let the assessor's office explain, where they're at on this.
So the petitioner mentioned the increase in value, and that was due to the change in classification, ag status, lost ag status, and they moved to vacant land. And the trigger for that was a note in the account by the previous ag appraiser, and it stated that Mr. Camaletti, who the previous lessee was, came in and said that the lease was canceled, and the fences were pulled down. So it changed from a grazing use to what we're seeing now is possibly alfalfa production. And we didn't see any proof that any alfalfa was produced. We went to look to see if we could see anything on the ground, and there was a gate, so we couldn't access it. So the best we could do was aerial images. And it looked like there was a 6-acre piece that was converted. That was pretty obvious. And there's a larger piece that was reclaimed mine tailings, maybe.
There's all that from Sun Coal back there in the
northwest corner.
That's all strip mine tailings.
And it was unclear if that was being converted, but what the determination was for the denial of the first level appeal was that we couldn't confirm that there was any production taking place for that year, for 2018, because the grazing lease had ceased, and we didn't see any proof that hay production occurred. And so it's kind of a question of nominal use. Does what's taking place qualify, or is this an intended future use? And the courts are clear on both of those, in that nominal use, this was applied to grazing, and they said that a week out of the year for grazing didn't qualify, and so likewise we felt that 1% of the property, mean hay, didn't qualify. And intended future use, the courts were also clear on that, stating that, you know, if you intend to convert ground or put cattle on a property, you know, you're not qualified until the actual use of the land is taking place. So that's why those changes occurred.
It seems like you got to...
Hold on.
Yeah. So, questions from...
Basically, the determination was we had the cattle operator coming in and saying, you know, this guy doesn't want any grazing on his property any longer. He's even pulled down the fences. And so the old ag appraiser was moving it for the next year to ad valorem assessment at a market value. That is the vacant classification. And then petitioner presented evidence of saying that he was trying to establish a haying operation on about six acres of the property. 6 out of 600 acres, in our view, was this is incidental or nominal use of a 600 acre parcel, and is this done for the motive of profit, or is this to just try to keep the preferential tax break of an ag status on the property. We had conversations with the division on it. They directed us to these couple court cases, which talks about a grazing operation and not haying, but our position was simply that we felt that trying to use haying as your ag activity on 6 acres of a 600 acre parcel was insufficient to establish or qualify the entire 600 acre property under an ag classification. So that was our basis for denying the appeal and maintaining the valuation of vacant land.
Thank you. Commissioners, do you have questions?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Two questions. Number one, is the attempt to establish alfalfa not considered an ag activity until you actually start producing and selling?
Correct.
The alfalfa? And that's based on, what's that interpretation based upon?
Guidance in the ARL. Gary, can you?
Well, property owners are certainly allowed to follow the land for a year or two when they're, you know, trying maybe de-weed the property or something like that, or prep it so with communication that is used. It's always been done when it's under that classification already, and they're saying, hey, we got to give the ground a break for a year or so, and they come in there.
Or during the drought.
Yeah, during the drought type of thing. So this is kind of a situation we maybe haven't been presented with, where we have a property owner that's saying, I'm no longer going to graze the ground. I'm going to try to establish a haying operation.
Or even if someone had a piece of property that had never been classified as ag, and they came in and said, hey, I'm going to turn this into an alfalfa operation. I ought to get the ag status in the 2 or 3 years that it takes me to establish the alfalfa before I actually show production.
Yeah, and I think we would, and I'm not real clear on the rules on that. We would be looking for evidence of weed control operations or something like that.
And that's fine. I can see that that's a little bit unique and maybe not the compelling argument here. So I understand your argument and agree that the 1% is not an appropriate amount to establish an ag operation. But I guess the question would be, what is?
Well, and I think this is not haying property. This is, at best, marginal grazing land. Okay, that's 600 acres of hilly terrain with some mine reclamation ground to it, and it's not conducive to a hay meadow.
But just for sake of argument, let's say we had a 600-acre property that had water, could be irrigated, and someone decided to start establishing an alfalfa operation. Would 5% of the land be enough? Would 10%?
That's a good question.
Okay.
There are no minimums stated in the ag statutes as to how much has to be. It just simply says has to be done with the intent to make a profit. Okay. Doesn't have to be the landowner that's making that profit. It'd be the harvester of the hay who's in the business of doing that in this case. Or, you know, it doesn't have to be the landowner that is leasing his land out for grazing is not in the business of profit off of grazing. It's that cattle operator.
Sure, I understand. Business of profit. It's your judgment that 1% is not adequate.
Yeah, our position here is trying to turn 6 acres out of 600 into a haying operation.
We understand that.
Is incidental or insufficient?
I don't have any more questions.
So back to your question, though. I mean, 1 year, I mean, remember the ag classification, you have to be an ag for 3 years if you go out of the ag. If you go out of ag, you have to be an ag for 3 years before you get the ag status back. So. And invalid.
Even if it was 100 acres or 200 acres.
And I think he says it right. I mean, it's the intent for profit, too, or somebody, whether it's...
And there needs to be continuity. So each and every year, each and every season, use needs to occur.
So just can you remind me when the... And, I mean, either of you maybe could speak to this. When the Camaletti lease ended...
According to the notes in the account, it said May 3rd of 2018, Albert Camaletti came in.
Okay.
And he canceled the lease for 2017 and 18.
And in your recollection, when was that lease canceled?
Canceled it. So, yeah, it would be around that time.
Okay. Thank you very much. So
we ought to talk about the value then. So how we establish the value, both the value to,
because
I still have,
if
the ag thing is not substantiated or whatever, we still ought to have the discussion about the value
of that
and,
land.
And how that value was established by the assessors.
So, I just have one other question on the lease, and maybe you can clarify for me how this is considered. So my understanding is that the... we're looking at a 2-year period that ends June 30th, 2018. Is that correct?
That's the data collection period.
Okay.
But all property is assessed as of January 1.
Of which year?
Of every year.
Right.
As to its status, as to its use. There is an exception, as there always is with statute and property tax assessment, that the courts have ruled that for agricultural classifications that the courts have basically ruled that, you know, you don't have to start a cattle operation, does have to be in place as of January 1 of that year. The courts have allowed, because of the snow country, that, you know, the qualifying year, the current year, that use can start in the middle of the summer or the fall. And they've allowed that to act. And that's the one exception to the assessment date of how the property stood on January 1. What was its continued use or whatever.
So
when we established ag, saying 2 years plus current, somebody could graze that property in the fall or the summer after maybe even buying it in, say, February or March. It's well past the assessment date, but they're allowed to count that towards the current.
So I understand what you're saying. My question is, I guess I'm not fully understanding the assessment period, but or the data collection period, but when I look at May 31st is when the lease was ended, for the majority of that data collection period, the lease was in effect, is that, and that's not relevant?
The lease was in effect for 16. Did you say it was canceled for 17 and 18?
So 2018 was the year that we presumed there was no activity.
Okay.
So May of 2018 was when the assessor's office was notified that it was canceled.
Yeah, so we have...
That's probably when we fenced it.
So we have a calendar year there of nothing happened last summer on this property as far as a grazing thing.
Okay.
So come our new reassessment in that January 1.
Okay.
And the information coming from that cattle operator saying that he no longer wanted grazing on the property, the lease was canceled, okay. The fences were taken down.
I understand. Thank you.
The ag classification was revoked for 19.
Got it. Thank you.
Do I get to talk again, or am I?
You do. So if you have questions for the assessor, is really, we don't need you to reiterate any information you've given us.
No,
we
but
understand. But questions for the assessor's office.
So I thought I heard that if you have like a couple years to try and cultivate it and get it going before you lose the ag status completely. So how can a guy, you know, try and get something established while he's paying all these real estate taxes? I mean, how does he make it?
So in that situation...
Because that's what we're trying to do, in essence. And if I put 5 cows on there, I get the ag status. And it doesn't make that much sense.
So your question is about transitioning that.
He should have continued the grazing until the alfalfa operation was established. And
I just didn't
transition.
I didn't know that. You know?
But that would be what it would look like in order to maintain it.
Yeah, if you're doing a change of use.
Which I could do. We could do that easily. And you can't. And one more thing. That if you take the acreage down on 40, and then all the acreage that we own almost encompasses all of that rim rock, and that's like a 50-foot cliff, and then all that strip mining, it's not 600 acres of ag land. It's maybe... 300. And even the 300 that's there is not very good.
Yeah, well, that's why we were trying to get to the value.
Yeah, so maybe let's...
Again, the property is still 600 acres.
I agree. No, so, I get it.
And then we need
I agree
to
with
out.
Everything
so
that,
I think,
that you guys
I think
have
we've
said.
I think we've established the conversation about the ag status, and we can make a determination on that. And
can
we have some information about how the valuation is?
Yeah. Before I get into that, I'd like to interject one other thing here
and
be completely transparent. And we do have properties, and what comes to mind is Big Valley Ranch subdivision that have an agricultural status for hay, and those are 35-acre properties, and only about 2 to 4 acres on a few of those parcels actually gets hayed. So we have those situations where it's certainly, you know, the requirement, like I said, there's no minimums in the statute. So, you know, the requirement is not the entire property has to be hayed or the majority of it by any means. So, you know, I don't know what that percentage is, but it's, you know, closer to 10%, 8% of the property. You know, our position here was just you know, saying you're going to hay 6 out of 600 acres, we thought was incidental or insufficient to establish the ag classification. I don't know what the carrying capacity of his land is and how much cattle he ran in the past. How much did Camilletti, how many
20.
Pairs, 20 pairs. So I just want to get that out there. That
understood.
That it's not the majority of the property or anything like that that has to be put into production.
Thank you.
Okay.
So can we
move on to that?
Yeah, have some information just about how the, as
sure.
Commissioner
sure.
Munger asked, how the value is determined.
So we break these down based on geographic areas in the county, and this is located in rural West. And we broke it down further into properties 250 acres and larger. And we had one comparable sale for that was about 9 miles south of the subject property. And it sold for $1.225 million in September of 2017 during the time period. And that comes to approximately $1,800 an acre. And it was next to State Land Board, considered open space. So the previous appraiser backed out 10%. That was given an influence factor for being contiguous to publicly owned land. So
that was considered a negative to the value?
Yeah, it was considered an influence factor. So
that's a negative to the subject.
So she backed out
to
establish the value that applies for 250-plus acre properties. She backed out 10% and said that a property that's not contiguous to public land would probably sell for about $1,600 per acre. And that was the value applied to all of those properties in rural West, greater than 250 acres. And likewise, that was what was applied to the subject property. I've got a couple maps included. And it looks like access and topography is pretty similar. They're both pretty rugged properties. The comp property may be even more rugged. But, you know, as far as development goes, it'd be pretty difficult to do on either property. They're both mostly grazing properties from what I can see.
Other than the one access is off of County Road, what's that, 37?
Yeah, I believe it's 37.
Yeah, I'm trying to locate it, which I may have struggled with.
They're in your packet.
Yeah, I'm trying to line up roads and stuff.
And the petitioner mentions, too, that there are structures on there.
Mm-hmm.
And in the packet, I attached a photo that we had, or photos of the structures.
That's on the comparable sale.
On the comp property, yeah. So they're largely storage sheds, movable. It looks like somebody's moved them in.
Hunting cabins.
Yeah. Negligible value.
I believe that's the parcel there.
Correct.
Yeah. And so, zoom in on. Yeah, it's very similar terrain.
Thank you. Anything else on that?
Nope.
Okay. Do you have questions about that? Comments you'd like to make in follow up?
I haven't been to that property.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's possible to get on ours, so it's way up off the county road.
All right.
Like a Jeep trail. So.
Do you have no access off of 40?
40 goes through it.
Right.
The rim rock's right there.
Yeah.
So we gave an easement to the government for 40 to be put through there.
40.
But you're right at the rim rock.
Okay, but you have Lobo Lane that takes you onto it. Or Lobo Court.
No, that's where Cruz put his gates up. We can't get in there.
So how is the property accessed?
We got to come all the way. We go up 52 and we go up like a Jeep trail to get up to it.
It's a brand new Dozer trail that just got.
Okay.
We just got an easement after we went through a huge lawsuit.
So there's not access from 40, is it?
No, they blocked our access.
Who's they did?
Cruz.
Or Ed did. Ed and Sherry.
Yeah, but you in the past have done. So if you go back over to the oil well site, I mean, the oil well site's right there next to that. You guys have, you dozed in a road up there from the oil well site, did you not?
Randy
Up the side of the Rim Rocks?
No, Randy Bocope's got his oil well, that Jones well up there.
Right, yep.
That's on the Jones property, but there is a road that goes up there, right to the Rim Rock. And then the tank battery's on our property. But you only have like 30 acres down there, you know, you can't get up.
But anyhow, we're agreeing there's no access from that.
From 40.
From 40 right there.
Okay.
And then during the lawsuit, and I'll tell you that was part of the deal, and so that providing access to his landlocked parcel is why the new access was granted
exactly
through the lawsuit to get up there from 52.
To this property?
To this property.
Okay.
The problem is, and he elaborated on it, I guarantee you, you wouldn't want to drive a Jeep. I wouldn't drive a Jeep up there. I'd drive a four-wheeler up there, but it's not. It's
scary.
It's like that. Just like that.
Okay. So,
and again, that's my comment here about, you know, if we aren't going to allow the ag value, or the ag classification and the whatever, and I think that's the petitioner's problem, that we end up not having an ag value here. In my mind anyhow, but at the same point in time, the 1600, or I mean, basically the things with that limited access, I mean, you couldn't, I don't know how you'd have to get a house up there even. You'd be able to helicopter in or something like that, because the road is that bad. I mean, and then you can see the reclaimed area. You can't even ride a horse over that stuff, that reclamation area. That all area there was part of the mine, and then this mine closed right before the Reclamation Act of 1970s came through. So it never got reclaimed. So that is physically what you see up there, and half of the property, too, is that kind of stuff.
So I'm hearing you advocate for a couple of different discounts to the assessor's valuation, one for lack of access,
yes, indeed,
and one for unusable portion of land due to the mine.
Yeah.
So I think that those are reasonable things. I guess the challenge for us would be to come up
with quantification.
How to quantify that. Is there some way that we can quickly estimate the area that is mine?
I can.
Because I would.
So we're talking about this area here.
Yeah, yep, I, you know, off the top of my head, it looks like 10 to 15% of the property. I mean, I don't know that, Gary, we're going to have time for you to come up with an exact number. So while you're trying to calculate that the percentage of acreage that's unusable because of the prior mining activity, maybe we could engage in a discussion of what would be an appropriate discount for inadequate access. Yesterday, we actually created a 50% discount on a property that had zero access. So for starters, I would say that any discount for access would be somewhere between 0 and 50%.
That seems reasonable.
Attempting to narrow it down any more than that, I think, becomes a judgment call on our part. There's a part of me that would like to maybe have Doug make a quick comparative analysis of the access on the property that was used for valuation purposes and the subject property.
In terms of access.
So what I could see, I mean, you looking at the property, I mean, you can actually drive to this one here because it's got the hunting cabins on it. That has to be hunting cabins. And so, I mean, it's used. And again, this place here, and I'll guarantee you, it's in the timbers and it's in Timbuktu. And, you know, it's kind of like the thing that we had yesterday that really virtually, I mean, you couldn't take your mother up there. I'll guarantee you that.
You've met my mother.
So I would never have taken my mother up
there. So I would throw this out for discussion. Yesterday we said a 50% discount for zero access. This has got at least half access. So would a 25% discount for poor access be a reasonable
So, and again, so again, the value to the properties too, and I realize that we're looking at this other, this comparable sale here too, which has a lot of things here too. I'll this basically doesn't have any water up there either. This does not have any. There's one little stream there that's part of a catch-up off of a, that's part of the problem with the ag property part of it too, is because it really didn't have any water up there. There's no water up on that mountain. It's up on the side of the mountain.
Do you guys typically consider water rights?
Water rights are not...
No, because you're just going for comparable sales. Yeah, okay. No, I'm sorry. No. I shouldn't have asked that question. So now I'm hearing a third item that you would apply.
And it goes back to his conversation about making the property being, ag qualified and the rest, too. I mean, you got to have some, other than open... Open.
So maybe I need to back up. I mean, I prepared to agree with the assessor's assertion that this does not qualify for ag status under the rules that are in front of us. And I'm very sympathetic to your plight. I think it's, a product of you not understanding the rules. But I don't know that we have the flexibility to say, oh, yeah, it's ag status. So I think we're kind of bound by prior legal
precedent. I would agree with that.
So now we really are just discussing the value, and we're talking about potentially a 25% discount for poor access, and we're also talking about a percentage discount for the unusable acres.
So that's what I've put out. It's a 78.6. I would just call it 80 acres. You can call it 100 if you, I don't know what
80 divided, what's the total?
600.
So 80 out of 600 is that?
13, 14%. So I've got 25% discount for access, 14% discount.
I think we have a little bit more down there.
So let's round it up.
20% discount.
I would call it 100 acres.
Okay, let's just call it 20% for unusable mined area. 25% for access, so I've got a 45% discount, and throw in another 5% for water, we're looking at a 50% discount on valuation.
Off the comparable sale, off the comparable number.
Off of the $960,000. I don't know that we can analyze it any better than
that. No, I think that's probably good.
Mr. Chair,
I feel okay.
Madam Chair, the matter of schedule number R352-6561, I would move to deny the petitioner's valuation and revise the assessor's valuation from $960,000 to $480,000 based upon the items that we discussed.
Second.
Other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The decision of the board may be appealed to the Routt County District Court, the State Board of Assessment Appeals, or through an arbitration process. And you'll receive a letter informing you of the decision and your right to appeal.
Okay.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
Have a great
Thank
day.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay.
Should we bring that phone over here? Get those guys in
we
here.
We still have somebody on the phone?
So I'm going to turn you over
to Anthony Pushnick with 1920.
All right, so we have Anthony and Stephanie on the phone. I have some introductory statements here. So we're ready to hear the appeal for schedule number R3255538. The first order of business is the swearing in of the petitioner. So I believe that's Anthony Frischnett. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And I would remind the representative from the assessor's office that she is still under oath. So, Anthony, I'm going to swear you in. Do you swear that...
So, we used to have Stephanie, too. What is Stephanie's capacity?
Oh, Stephanie, I'm sorry. Will you explain your capacity here?
I am a licensed realtor and Anthony's domestic partner.
Okay, thank you very much. We would swear in both? Okay, so we'll swear in both of you. Do you swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
Thank you. And Deanna, do you have Stephanie's name for the record?
What's her last name?
Stephanie, will you state your last name, please?
Yes, it's Shanahan, S-H-A-N-A-H-A-N.
Thank you very much. So I have a few introductory comments regarding the proceeding. The issue of today's proceeding is property valuation and or classification for assessment purposes, not property taxes. No discussion of taxes will be allowed. The assessor's office must produce information to support the basis and amount of the assessor's valuation of the property or classification if that is what is being contested. Where the comparable sales method is used, state statute provides that the assessor will determine value based on sales during the 18-month period ending June 30th, 2018. Sales may also be considered in 6-month increments immediately preceding the 18-month period up to 5 years if there are insufficient sales to obtain accurate comparable valuation data. Smaller counties commonly use a 24-month period in order to obtain sufficient comparable sales data that better demonstrates the change in value from the prior level of value, June 30th, 2016. The 24-month period also eliminates seasonality from the sales data. Route County uses a 24-month data collection period. The petitioner and the assessor should not discuss sales post June 30th, 2018, except in cases where it can be demonstrated that a contract for sale was completed prior to June 30th, 2018 and closed after June 30th, 2018, according to the original contract. Under Colorado law, the present value of your property cannot be considered. The petitioner shall present his or her evidence first and shall have the opportunity to cross-examine the representatives from the assessor's office after they have presented their evidence. The decision of the board may be appealed, and we will refer to that after the motion has been made. So we will begin with evidence from the petitioner, please. Go ahead.
Okay, so my most recent comparable I took from these are all quotes from the period of July 1st, 2016 to June 30th, 2018. They are all attached single-family homes, condominiums coming from the MLS. They're all two beds, two baths, square foot. Is 845 to 1267. That's plus or minus 20% of our 1,056 square foot condo. The year built is from 1968 to 1978. That's plus or minus 5 years, as ours was built in 1973. It's not CNC out, and based off of all of these listings. Here, this is the most recent that I sent to Helena.
We have those in front of us.
Okay, yeah, the total price per square foot is $264. And I multiplied that by our square footage, which is 1056. And I apologize, the number was incorrect. It's actually $278,784.
Thank you very much. We'll have the assessor's office.
Questions from
the... Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Gary. Somebody's got to keep me in line. Questions from the petitioners?
I don't have any at this time.
I don't either.
No.
All right. Thank you. Assessor's office.
Okay. So for the 2019 reappraisal, I had 14 sales over at Ski Time Square Condos. Four of those sales are in the subjects tier of third floor units with 1,056 square feet. The subject is one of those sales that occurred during the time period. It sold for a time adjusted sale price of 281 square feet. The
dollars.
It's $281 per square foot.
Thank
sorry.
You.
The other sales that were within that tier There was a unit 315, which sold for a time-adjusted sale price of $277 per square foot. Unit 304 sold for $238 per square foot. And unit 313 sold for $282 per square foot. And again, with the subject at the $281 per square foot, I used a median valuation of $280 per square foot to value the two bedrooms, 1,056 square foot units within that tier. During the assessor level appeal, I did receive some comparable sales from the petitioner. Those sales included the subject property and then two sales from the Rockies condominiums. I looked at those sales, and there is a map included in my report as well that shows the proximity of Ski Time Square and the Rockies condominiums. So looking at those sales, also knowing that the subject sold within the time period and I did have other comparables from Ski Time Square, I did deny the petitioner's request to reduce the value to $277,728. For the CBOE level, again, the same information was presented to me by the petitioner. I did take a closer look at the sales that occurred at Ski Time Square in comparison to the subject property. There are some photos in my report that show those units, the condition of the subject property as comparison. And again, having those sales occur during the time period, the subject occurring during the time period, I felt that the valuation for the $280 per square foot or $295,680 was supported. I did look back at the sale for the subject property, and there was it did close for $295,000. I did do a small adjustment for some personal property and a seller concession adjustment that was noted as well. So the end, I believe their adjusted sale price is $292,500, but with the time adjustment, it's $296,303, and they are valued just slightly below their time adjusted sale price.
Questions from the commission?
Can you state again which unit numbers in Ski Time Square for your criteria again? I'm sorry.
Yes. So the units that I used at Ski Time Square were all 1,056 square feet. Units 315, 304, 313, and then the subject.
Questions from the commissioners?
I have a question. Did you say that the final number, your final recommendation is what? Because I'm looking at our packet, and it says $295,680. I thought I heard you say something different.
Let me pull up my packet here and look.
She did state both the time-adjusted sales price.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she was substantiating the value of this sale even with the time adjustment.
Yes.
So your final recommendation is the $295,680.
Yes, that okay. is the time-adjusted sales price of the subject property, yes.
Yeah, that's about $1,000 underneath.
About $1,000 underneath, sorry.
We're about $1,000 less than the time-adjusted sales price of the subject, okay. which only has 2 months of time trending okay. applied to it. That's a very late sale in the
yes.
production period.
Thank you. So, yeah, that time-adjusted sale price is $296,302. The property value is $295,680.
Great. Thank you.
That's probably what you heard. Other questions from the commissioners?
I guess I have a question again for the petitioner again. How did you come up with the $233 after you bought it for $295? The $232,320 that you put in the protest form.
I don't see anywhere where it's $232.
I'm looking at $277,728.
The initial was $278,728.
Oh, that's right. 2018.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was just life for life, just based off of I did those three comps based off condition, square footage. The other one that I recently submitted, I took all of the sales from that time period, life for life. I mean,
so even at that, at the 277, you're telling us that you bought, paid more for the property than what you even think it's worth?
That's correct.
Thank you.
At the time it was correct.
Do you have any questions you'd like to ask of the assessor's office?
I guess without really looking at all the time frames, go ahead, Stephanie.
I have 313 that was sold for $265 a square foot, 315 sold for $241 a square foot, and 304 sold for $222. I'm not seeing those higher numbers that were referred, like the $288 per square foot. Mm-hmm. I was just curious where this is coming directly from the MLS.
That is with the time adjustment that is applied to those sales. So the time adjustment.
Can you explain the time adjustment?
Yeah, I'll explain it. This is the assessor, Gary Peterson. So we are mandated by state statute to apply a time adjustment, is how it's commonly referred to. It's changing market conditions over time. Since we're dealing with a 24-month data collection period, we have to adjust all those sales as if they all sold on the effective appraisal date of June 30th, 2018. So in the upward trending market that we've experienced over the last couple of years and beyond, it's logical to say that a property that sold in August of 16 would be worth more in July or June of 18, which is the effective appraisal date. So we do a statistical analysis to measure what that monthly appreciation rate is in the market, segmented down to condominiums, grouped up around the base area. We had 402 qualified valid sales, and that monthly appreciation was measured at a little over a half a percent, 0.65% per month. So we are mandated by statute to use a time-adjusted sales price.
Is that clear?
How do you adjust it when the market levels off or say there's a downturn? How does that work?
If it doesn't meet some statistical criteria, then we determine that the trend is not strong enough, and then a time adjustment is not applied. But in this case, the trend was significant and was quite clear, and the measurement was all in compliance with the statistical parameters, and so it was applied.
Any other questions from the petitioners?
Stephanie, do you have any other questions?
No, I guess I'm just confused on how from 2016 to 2017, it increased 10%. From 17 to 18, it was 0%. But our overall number is looking like it's 27% of an increase, I guess.
Properties are reassessed every 2 years. So the intervening year, there is no reappraisal on the property. So that's why there's 0%.
Can I see your packet?
For tax year 18.
That one there.
My narrative?
Yeah.
Or the even years, you're not going to see any appreciation rates from the assessor's office.
Oh. I thought we got it.
I can't find it.
That's
all right.
Oh. So there's not a reassessment in the intervening year, which is why the value doesn't change.
So then what happens is whoever sold it, really, the taxes should have been increased, but the buyer ends up having to take the fee that wasn't assessed earlier. Is that correct?
Taxes are only reassessed every 2 years. That's just how it works.
Value is reassessed every 2 years.
Thank you.
Taxes are applied every year. So if you bought it in April of 18, the escrow companies only have a 2018 value. It's not known until May of 19 what the new value is to the public. So, yes, your taxes were based off the old valuation and the old assessment rate.
I'm ready.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yes, we're ready to move forward.
So, Madam Chair, regarding account R325,
5538, I move that we deny the petitioner's request for adjustment and validate the value of the $295,680.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. The decision of this board may be appealed to the Rout County District Court, the State Board of Assessment Appeals, or through an arbitration process. You'll be sent a letter informing you of the board's decision and your rights concerning the appeals process. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so I don't know.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
It's actually got that one done in 15 minutes.
Did we?
Yeah. So I was just pointing out.
To look at.
So we did sure. have these three pages in there.
Okay. So we're ready to hear the appeal for schedule number R3171477. I'll note that the petitioner is not present and remind the representative from the assessor's office that he is still under oath. Considering that the petitioner is not present and that I've stated these introductory comments multiple times today, is everyone all right with me not stating them again?
Yeah.
Okay. We're all clear on what's happening here. So we will go ahead and take comments from the assessor's office.
So this is a Steamboat Lake subdivision lot, 0.26 acres, vacant lot that the petitioner was appealing the value on, and he also appealed or he questioned the senior exemption in the initial appeal. And because it was a vacant parcel, he was denied the senior exemption. It needs to be a residence. You need to live in it for 10 years. So that was denied. And moving on to the value, we had, I think it was three sales in the Steamboat Lake subdivision that were between 0.21 and 0.49 acres. And these sales are, or these parcels are all on buildable lots because they don't have water and sewer infrastructure to them. So what you're seeing up there is a trend to consolidate to get to 5-acre lots. And we've had three sales up there, and it appears that these are all efforts to consolidate to achieve a 5-acre lot. They've allowed vacating right-of-ways or unused roads to create 5 acres.
They being us, yeah.
That's good. Yeah, they're very familiar.
Not the Board of Equalization.
They're very familiar with the consolidation process.
We are.
I think the subdivision approves it, too. I'm not sure. Yeah, and if you look at a map, there's opportunity to create 5 acres if one of these lanes is vacated. I don't have the exact name here. And
that's okay. We understand. There's sure. opportunity to create 5-acre lots there. We can see that on the map.
In the range of sales, the three sales go between $3,000 to $4,500 an acre. And
per lot,
I'm sorry. Let me clarify that. So we value these per lot. Anything between the 0.21 and 0.49 acre range receives the same value. The subject's value is $3,800, and he falls within that range, so it was denied at the assessor level appeal.
Thank you. Questions from the commissioners?
One to you, Madam Chair. And
yes.
In fairness to the petitioner who's not present, would it be appropriate for us to try to decipher the evidence that he presented in his handwritten notes? I'm struggling to...
It's unclear what he wrote there.
We have it. They were written out. We typed it out.
Oh, good. Thank you.
It seems like mostly insults of the assessor's office.
Yeah, yeah.
I gathered that.
Is that right?
Also, there seem to be some other words in there that, I don't know if it would be helpful.
Here, let's see if I can read it.
Thank you.
Peterson, this is the best response land, in parentheses, from a bureaucratic lazy in parentheses, group of employees. Like I said, you pay me $3,800 for the land, and I would be very happy. Broker sale agents say it is worth, at best, $1,800. It only takes 10 seconds to confirm on the computer you do have them, question mark.
I think that's an I, actually. You do have them, I assume.
I assume, yes.
Oh, assume is what it said. Yeah, I thought it said something else.
Then he signs it, then he says, I am sure I'll get another canned response, maybe no response.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, the principle, yeah, the best response, canned, is what.
Got it.
Not
okay.
Land. Great. Sorry, we had it written down somewhere.
Thank you.
I would like to address the subject has good roads to it. One of the comp one kind of has good roads too, and then the other two do not. Comp one being over in this area, if I can get my bearings. Comp one being northwest of it right here. Comp one is right here on the corner. So it's a nope, that's the one, not so good road. So that's kind of a two-track road. Comp one selling for how much?
$3,000,
and then comps two and three, which are much farther south, adjacent to one another, that do have the good roads.
I think we've seen. I've seen.
I should clarify two of these. I believe it was comp one. If you look at the Steamboat Lake water and sewer infrastructure map that they have on their website, it shows that they intend to build infrastructure up there for water and sewer.
But they do.
I confirmed with them that they have no intentions to do that.
Yeah.
So those comps do not and will not have infrastructure for the foreseeable future.
Great. Madam Chair, in the matter of account number R317-1477, I move to deny the petitioner's application for a reduction in value and uphold the appraiser's conclusion of value at $3,800.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. I'll just state for the record that the decision of the board may be appealed to the Route County District Court, the State Board of Assessment Appeals, or through an arbitration process, and that the petitioner will be sent a letter informing them of the board's decision and rights concerning the appeal process. Thank you very much. All right, we are ready to hear Perry Lynn LLC. This would be the appeal for schedule number R3205410. Petitioners can come.
And we do need to call Mr. Gantz.
Okay. Will you get the phone down?
We're calling Jim Gantz.
Okay.
He's one of the owners, Harry Lynn.
Yes.
You got a number?
Yes, it's right there at the bottom. And this here is.
If you'll give a copy to the.
This is a copy that was submitted at CBOE. It wasn't in the online.
Package
because it
us.
Had
yeah.
confidential
some redacted information.
You guys need a copy too?
Yeah, okay.
Was this submitted previously? Is this the same as in the.
No, this is our.
In addition.
Hello, this is Jim Gann.
Jim, this is the Route County Board of Commissioners, and we're hearing today, and so I'm going to turn you over to our chair, Commissioner Melton.
Hi. So our first order of business is to swear in our. We have three petitioners, one on by phone and two in person. So let's go ahead and have the petitioners state their names for the record. First, please.
Abby Schisler.
Aaron Schisler.
And on the phone.
Jim Mann.
You got those, Deanna? Thank you. So our first order will be swearing in of these petitioners, and then I remind the representative from the assessor's office that he is still under oath. So the three petitioners, do you swear that the testimony you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Thank you very much. So I'll make a few introductory comments. The issue of today's proceeding is property valuation and or classification for assessment purposes, not property taxes. No discussion of taxes will be allowed. The assessor's office must produce information to support the basis and amount of the assessor's valuation of the property or classification if that is what is being contested. Where the comparable sales method is used, state statute provides that the assessor will determine value based on sales during the 18-month period ending June 30th, 2018. Sales may also be considered in 6-month increments immediately preceding the 18-month period up to 5 years if there are insufficient sales to obtain accurate comparable valuation data. Smaller counties commonly use a 24-month period in order to obtain sufficient comparable sales data that better demonstrates the change in value from the prior level of value, June 30th, 2016. The 24-month period also eliminates seasonality from the sales data. Rout County uses a 24-month data collection period. The petitioner and the assessor should not discuss sales post June 30th, 2018, except in cases where it can be demonstrated that a contract for sale was completed prior to June 30th, 2018 and closed after June 30th, 2018, according to the original contract. Under Colorado law, the present value of your property cannot be considered. The petitioner shall present his or her evidence first and shall have the opportunity to cross-examine the representatives from the assessor's office after they have presented their evidence. The decision of this board may be appealed, and we will refer to that after the decision or motion has been made. The petitioner has provided some exhibits to the board to consider, and we will put those into the record as well. So we'll have you, the petitioners, speak first, please.
All right. Thank you for meeting with us today. So I'm going to be going through the copy we gave you. I'll just be talking through it if you want to follow along. So the original intent of this meeting was to reclassify the percentage between commercial and residential. That's why we were meeting with you today. But after we had been presented the information from Gary with two court cases supporting his denial, we are asking for you to consider the property 100% residential and reclassify it from mixed use to residential improvement property.
Could I interrupt for a second? Do you have a copy for us?
I do, yeah. So just to give you a little background history, so we originally came to Kevin and Gary in March of 2018 to chat through this, and what we were trying to figure out is the classification of it. And first and foremost, when we bought the property in August of 2016, we were sold and purchased Bella Vista as residential real estate. That was very clear from the previous owners and from the broker that they were not selling commercial property to the point where they wouldn't even share any financial information with us on any financials at all. So Bella Vista, you know, was residential property, not a commercial property. If you look at the offering memorandum that we included in this packet, you'll see descriptions highlighted that refer to the property as a family retreat, a unique opportunity to purchase a generational asset, the opportunity to have a true family compound and allow this home to be a private resort for every generation in your family for generations to come. So while we were aware that Bella Vista had a mixed-use classification when we purchased the property, we've been arguing from the very start that Bella Vista's tax burden should be no more than it would be if it were considered 100%, if it was classified as 100% residential. So just going back to the history, we came to them in March 2018. The assessor had argued from the start that he needed to classify Bella Vista according to its use, which he classified as a mixed use. And currently it stands at 81% commercial, 19% residential. Since the assessor was stuck on this mixed classification, we filed an appeal on May 10th of 2019 requesting that he reclassify some of the buildings on property specifically. So the lodge as 50 or 100% residential, our cottages as 100% commercial, and then the overlook is 50-50 residential commercial split, which would have modified the mixed use to 29% commercial and 71% residential. And this request was based on the argument that these reclassifications would be more in line with similar properties around Steamboat. And we offered two examples specifically of these properties, one being Over the Edge, which is the ski and ski out by the mountain, the other being the Edelweiss Chalet. So if you compare those three home pages, which we've included their home pages in, as well as ours in your little packet here, you'll see that these three properties are used very similarly. So the assessor denied that appeal, believing that the mixed-use classification to be correctly applied to the Bella Vista property. And his main argument was that the granted PUD zoning specific to the Bella Vista property allows unique uses not found with the county property without the PUD zoning. So it's, you know, it's clear that the assessor is classifying Bella Vista as primarily commercial pretty much because of the PUD zoning. However, Bella Vista couldn't operate, wouldn't be allowed to even offer short-term rentals without this special use permit or PUD zoning, as you'll see the clip that we got in the mail in your packets that, along with the notice of valuation, that they're not allowed in the county. So after that argument, we then filed this appeal to you guys, which we were going to come today, asking for a reclassification to be determined by the actual commercial value of the estate versus the residential value. So that would have made a split of 42% commercial, 58% residential. We agree with the assessed value of the property, which is assessed at $1.85 million. We're not here to argue the assessed value in any way. We're here arguing for 100% residential, and, you know, part of what the assessor has brought up is that, you know, the price that we pay $3.5 million in August of 2016, far exceeds the $1.85 million that it's assessed at, and he is putting into question as to what the true value of that special zoning entitlement is. And we're saying the difference has absolutely nothing to do with the income potential of the property and everything to do with it being a one-of-a-kind, limited edition, legacy property that we are just allowing others to, giving them the opportunity to enjoy the property. So, and I also wanted to mention that, you know, the income potential for Bella Vista falls far short of what would be needed to equal or exceed its value as residential. So, those are our points on that. So what I want you to review closely is the three bullet points the assessor has listed on page 8 of the original documentation that he gave you. So if you want to look at page 8. So what we believe the assessor has erred is by classifying Bella Vista as a mixed-use property. It does not fall under the definition found on assessor addendum item 1, 5.5A, hotels and motels. So, for example, we do not rent out individual rooms or even individual buildings. We rent the entire estate as a whole. You take the whole thing or nothing at all. All inquiries are thoroughly reviewed, so we don't accept everyone. We scan every single person that is wanting to stay at the estate, and we only choose those that align with our mission and our values. Furthermore, we were only occupied by other than ourselves or our family and friends, 101 days in 2017 and 108 days in 2018. So Bella Vista clearly falls under the definition of the residential improvement. And then now I want to refer you to the two court cases, pages 27 to 59 of their submittal. In both of these cases, the classification of property similar to Bella Vista was changed from residential to commercial, and in both cases, the residential classification was upheld. So we feel we're very similar to these cases in regards to Bella Vista. It was purchased as a second home or vacation home. The first court case is even similar that for the fact that it was purchased for estate planning, just like the Bella Vista. The assessor, in both cases, the assessor attempted to change the offering short classification from residential two commercials simply because the owners were advertising on VRBO, just like Bella Vista, and in both cases, it was pointed out that all necessary approvals were received in order to offer short-term rentals, just like Bella Vista. So we've included the pertinent excerpts, which is actually the last two pages of the copy I gave you. So if you go through...
Hello?
I got disconnected. I'm sorry. This is Jim Gann.
Oh. Yes, sir.
We're okay. Still here. Ms. Schisler is still speaking. Thanks.
So if you go through the last two pages that we gave you, the highlighted part at the bottom and then the top of the last page, these outline exactly the Bella Vista story. So property was designed for use predominantly as a residence. The site was purchased and home built for personal use. That was by the Bob Adams. The intent was to use the property as a second home and an inheritance for their sons. That's the exact reason that my dad helped us out with buying this property, was for his estate planning. It came at the same time that we found the property. The decision to allow short-term rentals was made to offset the expenses and share the experience. That is 100% why we are allowing short-term rentals, is because it's an extremely old property. We pour a ton of money and love into it, and we're only offering the rentals to offset those expenses. And even though the property was made available much of the year, most of the rental activity occurred in the summer. That's exactly our story. And in this case, the O'Neill family used it for themselves when possible, which is us. For example, this weekend we had a group of rental wanting to come in and check out on Saturday that we denied because we're using it for our friends this weekend. So it is first and foremost a residential property that we use for our family and friends, that we rent on the side to help curb some of the expenses and to honestly share the beauty of the estate with visitors that come to the Steamboat Valley. So, in conclusion, we asked the CBOE to change the mixed-use classification of Bella Vista and classify it as residential just to be consistent with its use.
Thank you. Commissioners, questions for the petitioners?
Not at this time.
So, yeah, I have a question. So, originally, the Joss Vans had a special use permit for the nightly rental. Have you guys not continued that on?
We have to have the special use permit.
On top of the PUD zoning?
No, it's not a special. We only have PUD zoning. We don't have a special use permit. So we have not continued on with the special use permit.
So we're illegally renting nightly rentals?
No, the PUD zoning allows us to have nightly rentals. And that's included in this.
Even without a special use permit?
The PUD is kind of
in place of a special
use permit.
No, I understand. That's a zoning.
Yeah. And it's specific to the property. And outlined in the approvals.
So where's the PUD?
It is in your packet.
In our, let's see, if you look in this
page 15 is the beginning of it from the Rapp County Planning Department with the PUD recorded and approved.
Yes,
and then the
15 and 16 of
that. Of it.
Okay, that's all the question I have for now.
Okay.
All right, we'll have the assessor's office give your evidence, please.
Okay. So, yes, this is a classification appeal. Petitioner is not contesting the valuation we put on the property at $1.85 million. The property was purchased within the time period of our data collection period. The property was purchased for $3.55 million, adjusted for personal property and management. Our ongoing concerns, we have an adjusted sales price in the neighborhood of $3.2 million. Kevin, I was trying to find that number.
Yeah,
3.24 million.
600.
Purchase for 3.55. Adjusted sales price of 3.2. It is being valued at 1.85 million under a mixed use classification. To speak to the improvements, are built, designed as residential. units. houses. But we do value off of use, and part of that is, and I'll just try to give you an example here. Oak Street has a bunch of houses that are mixed use or completely commercial, but they were designed and built as houses, but they do not get a residential classification. So the definition of residential improvement can be a little misleading in how it's worded. So it's not an automatic, because these are houses, they get a residential classification. Secondly, and I was trying to find it here, and I apologize, under the definition of hotel and motel unit, she does say, yes, they don't rent out individual rooms, and it's the entire property. But under the consideration, if multi-use is permitted by land use regulations, the land shall be allocated based off the proportion of the actual value. But under the consideration of that mixed-use allocation, you do take into the fact the zoning of the property in making your determination. The petitioners in initial appeal were requesting a 50-50.
At the assessor level, it was, and Abby had commented on it, requested 29% lodging and then 71% residential.
Okay, and then in our this request got modified later on during our talk, maybe a 42 versus 458. They'd like the main house, what they call the lodge, at 100% residential, and the other two either at 100% commercial and 50-50 on the other one, the caretaker property. We had them, the caretaker, at 50-50 up and down, and we had the other two at 100% commercial or lodging improvements. Conversations with them, they said they sometimes rent out the caretaker unit as well. But we didn't change our allocations or anything like that. The testimony today you've heard from Abby is framed very much to the court case that's being presented, which is a single family VRBO. It is a case that got overturned and turned back to residential. The highlights made in there, you know, and she talks to it that the property is, it's up to them who they rent it to. They're using the rentals to subsidize the expenses of the upkeep of the property. So, you know, an argument can certainly be made that is this property 100% residential, and this is no different than Over the Edge or any other single family in the city that rents out these houses. And we've seen that more and more, where these, especially around the ski area, they're building these properties very high end with no owner or occupant in mind in the design and construction of these properties, other than for nightly rentals, and it is a business. They're held under an LLC, and they're being managed as a business, generating hundreds of thousands of dollars in lodging income. They're being assessed 100% residential. My distinction of why we have a mixed-use classification on it, and as she mentioned it, is the zoning. That PUD zoning allows that property to operate unlike any other property in unincorporated Rock County can legally. As you're fully aware, any other house out there, property out there, cannot do nightly rentals without a special use permit. All of our guest ranches have a mixed-use classification to them. They're lodges. They may be on 120 acres, and there's agricultural classification on the vast majority of that parcel, but the land underneath the cabins or the lodge, the central meeting lodge area, all the various rental cabins and stuff, that is assessed at a commercial market value. The cabins themselves are at a 29% assessment, and it is a mixed-use classification of that can have both the agricultural classification, the commercial classification, and the residential for the owner of the property and their house that sits on that ranch. So in my eyes, and speaking to Chad Phillips, the planning director, the Bella Vista is very much just a guest ranch. But it doesn't have that Western cowboy theme to it. The property itself and its uniqueness is and its value is driven off of its location and its wonderful views overlooking Lake Catamount, the closeness into the ski area and accepts and such. In our eyes, that property is first and foremost a lodging property. That's the way it's been managed for over the last 15 years and operated. It's been granted special zoning to do that. We don't see a change in that with the new buyers. You may have a different opinion. That's why we're here. It is ran very much like a, well, I want to say that. I was going to say it ran very much like a B&B or a hotel, but at the same time, you can say it's run very much like a VRBO, you know. So this is a very gray area. In the terms of uniformity of assessment, I think it's more like a guest ranch in unincorporated Rock County than it is a single family or duplex property in city limits that by way of its zoning is granted the ability to do nightly rentals. Doesn't say they can do weddings, special events, can't have 200 guests. I don't know what that, you know, the limitations of that zoning is for those type of properties. It just says
the limitations are included in the
PDA.
Terms of approval.
Yeah, I'm talking about city properties that are zoned,
okay,
allowed to have nightly rentals. Would they be allowed to do 200 guests on a special event for a wedding or something like that? Parking 20 cars, that kind of thing. So the zoning gives it special entitlements. And then at the end, I would say if you're going to value the property or classify the property at 100% residential, and this is ad valorem assessment according to actual value, this property sold in the time period. It sold for $3.55 million. Adjusting out personal property and the management fees, we're at $3.2 million. If you're going to give it 100% residential classification, then I think you have to consider what's the actual value of that property then. And the buyers have demonstrated that market value is north of $3 million.
Questions?
Yeah, quickly. So we have which parcels being
all right, okay.
Two parcels.
All right. I forgot. That. I was gonna I was going to mention that earlier.
So thank you.
So yep. When.
So sorry, Commissioner Corrigan is. Or sorry. What's your name? Commissioner Moss.
George.
Is noting that we have two notices
yes.
of determination
so,
in the packet. So we'll get some. Sorry, we're trying to
as
keep people
see,
talking one at a time.
This property's been under appeal with this board a number of times over the 15 years or so that I've been around this office. We have investigated the property lines with GIS. They have recalculated and surveyed it, and they are accurate, as you see them here. Both these two buildings are bisected by the parcel line. And Josh, is that his first name? Dave Josh Van made a promise to this board back in 2009, 12, I don't remember the year, that he would replat the property. He made a promise to their board that he would replat the property prior to selling it to get rid of this problem. We treat the property as one economic unit. You can't look at it any other way. It operates as one unit, and so that's how we treated it. We treated it as a six-acre parcel, and we divvy the value of the land off to the two parcels based off their acreage.
So the answer to Commissioner Monger's question is that we're considering both of these together,
together.
And that the numbers we're referring to are adding these two together.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
So I just want to, at the beginning of the this hearing, I stated one of the schedule numbers, but not the other. So let's just make sure that both of those are included.
And the total value we have out of the 1.85 is for both parcels. It's allocated out based off of, and we had to flip the improvements. At the request of the petitioner, they asked if we would make that flip. Was that back when we first met?
It was prior to
the reappraisal.
The reappraisal being completed, yeah.
So prior to 2019, the main lodge and this part, and I think this house, were on the big parcel. And this house and the tennis courts and everything, and I think the tennis courts were still on the big parcel, were on the little parcel. And it was just, ass backwards and just, didn't make sense. And it just... It needs to be cleaned up.
I want to keep us moving, so
yeah,
I think
so
we have a lead on that question.
Quick question.
Go ahead.
So how did we come up with the 1.8 when you already knew that?
That was my question.
Okay.
That
we already.
We're valuing the structures using our residential model, our mass model on the residential part. We have, and the land is based off of our 10-mile radius land sales that we have in the area. We apply a modifier for both new and the PUD zoning. And I've done that, I think, on a very conservative basis. We've only added 80% to what a typical six-acre parcel in this area would sell for. So we're not even doubling the value for the dramatic views and the entitlements that come with the zoning. And then the structures themselves are not in great condition.
They're ancient. We all know. I know how old they are.
When I was up there with Josh's family, he was punching holes in the logs of the duplex, down by the ground there. He just taking the screwdriver and just punching it in. So they're not. The improvements are, are not in great condition.
But even then, all the ones you've come back to us with, you've had comparable sales and the rest that reflects some type of value, and this value in itself with the sale at the three whatever. I'm just still struggling how.
I guess the question would be, why didn't you use comparable sales?
Well, because the appeal has been about classification, and only about classification. They're happy with the value because it's about a little under half of. Or a little over half of what they actually paid.
But even without the appeal, why wasn't it valued?
Why in the first place did you not use comparable sales? Why did you rely upon the model instead of comparable sales your first go-around prior to any appeal?
Well, it's the mass appraisal process. So we have the sales, and we have our land codes. We got to put them into the land code that it fits for this area and its size. And all I can do is add a modifier for what it is above and beyond typical, in this case, view and the zoning. And I was saying, we only did a 1.8 modifier on that. If I could not get to their $3.2 or $3.5 million value on this under the market approach on the residential modeling.
Then what that suggested to us at the time during the reappraisal was that high price when correlated with the actual Res 10 sales, that there was
correlated with what?
Correlated or compared to the Res 10 sales, that higher price paid suggested to us that there was something more than just a residential purchase going on here, and we could never iron it out as to exactly what was going on with that. This sale could almost be considered an invalid sale because of the unknowns of that high, lofty
amount over the, you know, the 1.8 million.
Okay.
And when you have other sales that are represented within that model and calculating at 1.8, we felt like we were.
And our prior reassessment was about 1.7 on the property. It didn't. Yeah. We didn't jump the value huge just because it sold for 3.2, 3.5 million. You know, we thought, well, maybe this petitioner thinks he can certainly expand the revenue base of this property through better management, more intensive renting of the property or something. And maybe that's why they looked at it. Through the appeal process, we did learn, you know, that it wasn't necessarily marketed as a lodging property, but as a residential. And that was confirmed by Kevin.
During the sales confirmation, he did confirm that.
Petitioner has stated that no income numbers were given to him prior to, you know, closing on the property. If we were to do an income approach on it, which we did a pro forma on that, said, all right, it can have 28 overnight guests. We did a pro forma on that, saying, okay, that's 14 hotel rooms, you know, and what did our value come at?
It was just under the normal
expenses and ratios. It came out about 1.7 million under that. So we were, you know, it's a classification issue, and the value, you know, the 1.8 was, I thought, just a conservative thing. Understood there was a mixed use going on here, so you want to try to, you know, keep in mind the income approach to value on that and what the property is capable of generating. And, you know, the petitioner has told us, you know, in one breath what a sophisticated investor he is, has 2,500 apartment units, you know, throughout the country or whatever, and in the same or next breath, you know, tells us that the property on a commercial basis is only worth $750,000. And just begs the question back to us, then why pay the $3.5 million if you think the property is only worth $750,000 on the commercial basis, and on the residential side, maybe another $700,000.
Convoluted and complicated. Got it. Thank you. Did you have a follow-up question?
Just real quickly, I'm still struggling with the land value, even with the two of them added together. The land value is $100,000. With the 75 and 30 added together, it ends up being $105,000 for the land value.
I don't know where you're getting at.
Off of the
notice of determination.
The first one says.
No, we're $660,000 on the 6 acres.
So we're looking at this document, the notice of determination.
Okay. And then the back page.
So you have commercial. The commercial is both improvements and land.
Okay.
If you look at the first page of ours, we have lodging land at $452,000 rounded. And residential land, $106,000.
Okay.
So we're at $556,000 on land.
That answers the question, yes.
So getting back to these two documents, which are the ones that we're really working off of, this is which of these six line, we have five line items, which ones are the petitioner asking to be changed from commercial to residential?
Well, the commercial is broken out by land and improvement. I mean, the residential classification is broken out by land and improvement, and that is because of statute. The commercial properties do not have to be broken out by land and improvement.
That answers my question, yeah.
And so the commercial reflects both improvement and land value.
So is the petitioner's request to change the classification of this $579,590 to residential?
Today's request is 100% residential on the entire property.
On all of them?
Yes.
That there would be, oh really? Which one of these two schedules has the main house?
The smaller 1.6.
R32.
It's the one that's 1.65 acres.
Yeah.
And And so this $921,000 is primarily the main house.
It is the main house, and I believe only the main house.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a good breakdown of it on page 4 of what that's telling you there.
But on the first schedule, the $579,590 of commercial value is assigned to...
to a portion of the land, and 50% of that caretaker building, 100% of that, the swimming pool and the tennis court, and we have a detached garage over here.
Any other questions?
yeah, where the hell is going?
Do you have another question?
Yeah, I guess referring to the main house.
Yes.
If for some reason the petitioner stipulated that there would be no use of the main house by people using other parts of the property for their commercial lodging activities, would that affect your judgment?
No, it does not. The amount of usage doesn't affect the classification.
Seriously, if there was zero?
If it's rented one day a year, short term, then it opens it up to
commercial classification. So let's just say on that main house that the petitioner stipulated, we will never allow any of our guests in here. We're never going to rent out any part of this house. We're strictly going to use this house for our own use. Would you consider that residential?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
But that's not the case. How it's being used.
I understand that's not the case, but I just wanted to clarify that for my own edification.
Do you have any questions you'd like to ask of the assessor's office before we continue?
Well, I was going to ask you, Dad, if you have anything. We didn't really give you a chance to add any comments.
Yes, I've got a couple of points here.
I'm sorry, hold on just a second before you do that. I just want to ask, for the sake of time, we don't need you. We understand the arguments that have been made. We don't need anything to be reiterated, but you're welcome to add additional information.
Yeah. Well, what I would like to do is offer rebuttal on several points that Gary had made. So, first of all, the assessment. There seems to be a lot of questions. Is this property properly assessed? And again, you know, the question is not the assessment, it's the classification. But, you know, regarding the assessment, I asked Kevin, I said, okay, when you did your assessment of Bella Vista, how did you assess it? Well, they're required, you know, the assessor is required to assess the property according to its highest and best use. Clearly, that is residential. So, Kevin, explain to me, we assess Bella Vista as residential. So that would tell me that we factored in age and condition. And so that would tell me that I should have no problem supporting that assessment as residential by going out to the county and finding other comparable properties, age, condition, and, you know, they're gonna assess at the 1.855 that Bella Vista did assess for. So now, you know, Gary is trying to argue that because we paid 3.55 and it's only assessed at 1.8, that means we bought something more than just residential. Well, clearly, and you know, as Gary states, I'm a very savvy investor in real estate. I do have a number of multifamily properties. And the only reason I put any kind of a value for the rental income for that property was when Gary had to be convinced that this was a mixed-use property. He had to classify it as mixed-use. So I then said, okay, if you're going to do that, then can you at least put the percentage classification based upon what the actual business value of Bella Vista might be just based upon its rental income, which was $785,000, and then put the balance in residential. He said he couldn't do that. So, I mean, it's clearly the difference in what we paid and what is assessed at has it all about
location, location, location. We bought this as we were very comfortable paying the price we paid because we knew that with its location, that it was, if we decided we no longer wanted this property, we could, we were very comfortable and confident that we could put it up for sale as residential and we would not lose money. So, you know, that's just, it's just, it is a unique property. It is a unique property, a one of a kind. So that's, Gary called for the gas rate. There, believe me, you know, before we purchased Bella Vista, we looked at guest ranches. This is not a guest ranch. You know, guest ranches, they offer all kinds of amenities to their guests. They take them fishing, they take them horseback riding. This is not a guest ranch. No, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, it is not a guest ranch. The PUD, obviously, you know, Gary is hanging his hat on that PUD, but, you know, the county leaves us no alternative. You know, in order to offer the services that we do offer, we have to have that PUD. We have no choice. We get a little notice with our determination of value saying short-term rentals not allowed in Ralph County. Well, they're not allowed. We, you know, we wanted to offer them, so we're following the, we're doing all we could possibly do to be legal and, you know, do the things that we're doing. We're doing nothing different than many, many other Ralph County properties, doing the same thing. You know, we offer two examples, the Idlewild House and Over the Edge, and, you know, we're doing the same thing. The parcels, there's two parcels. How that came up, I can tell you how it came up, according to the way it was explained to me by David Jostan.
I'd like to interrupt. I don't think that that's really germane to the discussion. It doesn't make any difference whether this is one parcel or two parcel. And I think I think you've made your case well enough.
I would agree. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Yep. Thank you.
Yes, we should keep moving.
So I guess
lunch is in the rearview mirror.
I know.
I would have a question for all three of the petitioners. You're stating emphatically that this is simply a residential property. So my advice would be, don't do any rentals. Treat it as a residential property. The fact of the matter that you're actually producing income on this property based upon PUD zoning makes it clear to me that there has to be at least some element of commercial valuation to this property.
I would add a statement. You know, honestly, the short-term rentals thing, as the assessor's office has made it clear in statute, is very it's muddy at best, and we understand that. But when I look at, if I just put aside that nightly rental question, and I'm looking at your website, you're listing reunions, retreats, weddings. You can have up to 200 people on the property. That is not a typical short-term rental situation. And the PUD clearly reflects that. That would be my basis for determining that there is commercial activity happening on the property, that it is different than this very gray area around short-term rentals. Would you like to add?
Hell no. So I guess my only comment, you know, and again, I can understand the commercial going away, as unfair as it is. I mean, again, when Sheraton and the Grand are both residential units as well, the system we have created is not a fair system. At the same point in time, I'm not interested in throwing the 1.8 back in as a residential value when the thing got purchased. So I personally, and I'll be fine with whatever you guys want to come up with as motion. I think we're trying to come up with some consensus there. I guess the other thing is, you know, they still have another opportunity. If they don't like what we do or whatever, they still have it, you know. And again, I'm trying to save our staff brain damage and their brain damage, come up with something that's amenable to everybody. And so, you know, and I don't know. I, you know, it frustrates me
the way the system has come about, especially in these commercial properties and the ones that are semi-commercial. I mean, so nothing's being traded fairly here across the whole country.
But the reality is that it's not a short-term rental property because we don't allow short-term rental properties.
Well, we do. We do because we did in the PUD. But I guess I was here.
But there's a difference. I think Commissioner Bellman addressed that. There's a difference between a PUD commercial activity and a what we typically refer to as a short-term rental activity. So I don't know. I was going to bring up the same point that you did, which is there's another level of appeal here, and we could choose to kick the can down the road and deny the petitioner's appeal and let them take it to a higher level that may be in a better position to make a legal judgment. Because there, I mean, there's some complex legal issues here.
I agree.
I'm struggling with coming out.
Can I answer your question really quickly? Hold on just a second.
Wait, please.
Yes.
Let's let the commissioners finish speaking.
Do we have questions? I was done speaking.
Okay. I'm not sure what rebuttals are required. I mean, we're evaluating the facts that have been presented in front of us. So if you have different information than what you've already shared, we can take that.
I just wanted to answer his question.
What was his question?
His question was if you want to be classified as 100% residential, why wouldn't you just take it off of and stop doing reunions, retreats, weddings, and renting it out nightly? And the answer to that question is we could support the expenses that go into the upkeeping that property without doing those things.
I figured and that was the answer. I understand that as an answer.
Honestly, you know, in this packet with the property, you know, whether property is classified as residential or commercial is designed for use predominantly as a place of residency, which is what we believe we bought, or whether it was used for activities having profit as a primary gain. And I can tell you that that is not our goal, is to have profit as a primary gain. From the very beginning, we have bought this property to share with others and to glorify God by bringing people together to connect. We turned down so much business. If profit was our primary gain, we'd have a wedding every weekend. We only have 10 that are friends or family, locals, to provide an experience.
I'm going to interrupt you. I get that. Thank you very much for that. But I think that the definition of the property is commercial. Doesn't necessarily depend upon the fact of whether or not a profit is being generated. You can have a commercial activity and lose money all the time. I had business for years. I know how that goes.
Yes.
So you want to make a motion?
My inclination is, as much as I appreciate the arguments that you're making, and I suspect that you may be correct on some of the legal issues that you've raised, my instinct is that there's commercial activity taking place up there. And so based upon that, I'm going to make a motion to deny. No, I'm just going to make the motion, and then we can have a little more discussion so I can make it clear. Madam Chair, in the matters of schedule number R3208311 and schedule number R3205410, I move to not approve the petitioner's appeal to change the classification and uphold the assessor's classification of the properties at the values shown.
Second.
Other discussion.
So, yeah, the discussion is that I think there's a chance that you're right on the legal issues, and I think that I would encourage you to appeal whatever decision we ultimately make here to the next level of appeal, and I think that there'll be a better opportunity at that level for the BAA or district court or arbitration to better evaluate the legal arguments that you've made.
I think that's a fair assessment. I would agree with you that my gut is that there is commercial activity happening here and that the assessor's valuation is appropriate. And as we've mentioned, there's a lot of gray area in the statute and in the state of things like short-term rentals in Colorado right now.
There are others
who would probably be much better equipped to provide an assessment of that. Would you like to make any other decisions? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 I would make one other comment. I do appreciate the professionalism of your presentation. Oftentimes we have folks come in here without good evidence and just throwing some numbers around. I really appreciate a lot of the arguments that you made.
So, as has been noted, the decision of the board may be appealed to the Rock County District Court, to the State Board of Assessment Appeals, or through an arbitration process, and you'll receive a letter informing you of the board's decision and your rights concerning the appeal process.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Madam Chair, I'll be back.
All right. Things we have to do.
Well, my name's Leona Thurston, and I am showing my market swine and selling them at the 4-H livestock sale this year. And then I use all the money that I make for college tuition in the future.
My name's Justin Hyde. I'm selling market goats and market turkeys at the fair this year, and I use that money for college tuition.
My name's Evan Meyer, and I sell market beef at the fair. I use the money to pay off past expenses and save up for college.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. We just wanted to come and invite you guys to the Junior Livestock Sale this year. I have 2 barbecue tickets for each of you, so you can come and
get food. Oh, I thought you were going to say you had 2 that you had to share.
One of you has to stay home. You guys can go ahead and just, like, come to the barbecue, which is always nice. It's local meat and very good. And then come to the sale after that. Yeah, I just wanted to invite you guys and make sure that you guys had an opportunity to come.
We have a poster for you guys that's got all the dates on it and stuff there, and it's just got some pictures at the bottom and the sale and everything in past years.
Great. And so I'm kind of going to talk about the sale and just a new addition to the sale that we have. So instead of actually purchasing a 4-H member's animal, you can do what's called an add-on, where you can add on to a specific member or just a general group, like just say add this much on to everybody. And so this is a great way to support the kids without actually going through the commitment of purchasing an animal. And it can be a smaller scale way to really bump up the price of a low-selling animal or just to support the general 4-H livestock members. So I've got some add-on forms. It's got a few details for you guys. There's 3 of them. So just you can read about them if you would like.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
There you are.
Thank you. That's a great idea.
Yeah. It's a good way to, like, get more people involved without having to really go
have to buy
all
in
and get a whole animal, yeah.
Absolutely.
And then the sale this year is August 14th and the barbecue 17th. And then the sale or the barbecue begins at 3:30 and goes to 5:30, and then the sale begins at 4:30.
3 to 5
is the barbecue.
Oh,
my bad.
We have all the numbers right here in front of us. Thank you.
So do you have any questions?
Well, I would just like to thank you for coming to present to us. And I think 4-H is such a great program, and it's exciting to see the work that you do. And I just am always impressed whenever I've seen you speak. I think the last several years, you just keep getting taller. I am always impressed by the public speaking skills that you all develop as well. So I really appreciate it. I don't have any questions.
I don't have any questions.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you guys.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Yep. Thank you for the personal invite.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
How are you doing?
Good, Larry. How are you?
How much time do we have?
7 minutes. We take a good 7-minute break.
I'm going to grab a sandwich out of the car.
Yep, do it.
Good. Take care.
Where do we put these? Do we have spots for them?
I think we've already got them downstairs.
Okay. So. I'm sure Todd has put them.
I don't know if they're going to have any bulletin boards or anything.
Okay. Well, we can give them to the office.
Yeah, I'll take one with me. I'm going to find a place for it.
You want to take one?
Yeah, I'll take
great. One. I'll give the other one to Diana and see if she has it.
Oh, that was some fun shit there. So, you know, 15 minutes is not that.
It's not that.
Not at all. In fact, never has ever cut it. So, I don't care. There's no way you can get it. So, the 15 minutes is not cutting it at all.
No.
I mean, even for a simple one, it still took.
Do you think? I mean,
that simple.
I would welcome any feedback on how I can make it go faster.
Oh no, I don't think you can. I think we're just.
I don't know how we're going
to stretch it in to have a half hour per
or maybe 20 minutes at least. But I agree. I mean, it's hard to
No. I mean, we only got one done in 15 minutes. I mean,
that was a simple slam dunk combo.
Well, I just, you don't want to interrupt people because you want them to feel like they have the opportunity. It's kind of a
government
balance,
process.
Right? Well, and also, Gary, God, does he want to just tell you every single thing that doesn't matter? But it's hard to interrupt and say, well, I don't think what you're saying matters. You know, like that, maybe it does, and we just don't know why. And but I would, well, I mean, you know, if you have any thoughts on moving it faster,
no,
I'm happy
to
take
them.
But
meeting, absolutely.
Okay. But yes, I agree with you that it doesn't seem like it's enough time. Well, either that or we just keep running behind schedule, but probably don't back them up to lunch like that. We all are going to need lunch breaks, that's for sure.
You know, that property has been a problem child forever. That Joss fan, he was such a liar.
Was he?
Oh, he's just a typical dirtbag. You remember him, Joss fan?
Oh, yeah. He was a cheap.
What?
He was a shyster.
I know. It just feels like such a joke to me. It's not a commercial. Really? I mean, we're using it as food to me, and our friends use it. And I'm like, I mean, they're charging $18,000 for 4 nights.
How much?
$18,000 for 4 nights.
God bless.
It's just so tremendous.
You feel
that
about it. Yeah, I really feel that.
Oh, my God. I mean, I'm looking at their website. I'm like, are you kidding me? This is business. Anyway, that's my opinion.
But you're right back on schedule. Good job.
Yeah, right. Well, we crossed out lunch. We skipped one agenda item.
We just skipped
one small item.
I've got to admit that the highlighted precedence gave me pause for thought. I mean, for us to sit here and analyze statute and legal precedent in a 15-minute time frame is a fool.
Well, that's what Doug was just saying. We need more time. There's no question about that.
Yeah, that's my suggestion. We need to, especially anything like this, we need to up to a half hour or at least 20, 25 minutes.
It needs to be obvious that...
Yeah, because we can't...
Because I knew that was going to take us more than 15 minutes. There was no question about it. But I think the thing is, what was being ignored is they're not just... It's not like the Sheridan, where they're just renting out rooms on a nightly basis. It's not. It's a retreat center. I mean, they're having weddings and, I mean...
Well, relinquish the PUD and it's a residential property.
Great. Go for it.
I'm going to be fascinated to see how the BAA...
You know, you sent around that one thing about the ability for the county to merge lots. This is a tip that would be a perfect opportunity to merge that, whether you want to or not, you know? I mean, what the hell? So we actually could ask, but I don't think there's any way you could sell either one of those lots, even with the weed.
Why wouldn't they be inclined to request a merging of those lots?
I don't know, other than just what Gary said, you know, well, there is no...
It doesn't make any difference.
It costs you $5 to merge those two. That's how big a deal it is. So,
I guess it doesn't really make practically... We're more motivated to see that happen than they are.
Yeah, and it really doesn't matter to them. What does it matter to them? Come on up.
All righty.
Yep, bring your stuff up. We'll be...
Forgive me, I'm eating my lunch right now. Another reason to hate BOE hearings.
To hire somebody to hear all these.
Oh, man, this is going to be a good day to discuss that.
We just skipped our lunch break, having Board of Equalization hearings.
Poor Beth. I mean, I remember when I first started doing these, they were all slam dunk and stipulations and...
Oh, I love this shit.
This should be pretty easy.
We'll see. You're not trying to negotiate on the value or anything like that, right?
What's the city worth?
Yeah, I know. All right, maybe we're a little punchy. All right, so we're considering supplemental funding to support a greenhouse gas study. Scott, if you want to just give us the rundown real quick here, that would be great.
We'll do that. As you said, this is consideration by the Rock County Board of County Commissioners to approve supplemental funding in the amount of $5,000 to support a greenhouse gas study in partnership with the City of Steamboat Springs. So, and just some more detail. The City of Steamboat and the Steering Committee representing Route County, Colorado Mountain College, Yampa Valley Electric Association, YVSC, and Ski Corps were tasked with developing a countywide greenhouse gas emissions inventory. The primary goal for the inventory is to gain understanding of emissions so that we may establish prioritized meaningful actions to reduce emissions in Route County. And then one part that Commissioner Monger had asked about was comparison to the previous inventory, and that was part of the scope of work. I also have a monthly report from June, in case you guys want to see that, and also what's been spent so far. So that's for your information. And all I need at this point is a signature from the chairperson, and then also a signature on the resolution.
So, if I could, quick question, Madam Chair.
Yes,
so,
please.
So we don't have in here the total budget, and again, so we're partnering. The City Steamboat is being the fiscal agent. They're doing that, correct? So who else is partnering with all of that?
As far as I know, it's just the City of Steamboat in Route County who are providing funding.
Okay.
And there is a summary of tasks and expenditures here. And as far as I know, Route County and the City of Steamboat are the only entities donating funding to the effort.
And 100% of this is being provided by a consultant, or are there in-kind services being provided as well?
Nope, 100% from the consultant, Lotus Engineering, who's out of Summit County.
So I'll note that also for us in the record that we had had this discussion during our budget time, and we had all agreed conceptually with it. I think it didn't get put into the final budget as we moved forward. So I'm totally in support of this, and note that.
So that was noted in the supplemental budget information that it was really just a timing issue, as far as it's not really an additional. It was planned, and we weren't prepared to budget for it at the time.
That's correct.
Okay.
I thought we were planning on it and it didn't get in the budget. Or we didn't.
That might have been the case because we. We had some miscommunication with the former account manager, and I guess I'm not remembering clearly
all
that happened.
Either way. I have resolution number 047 here.
Just one more quick question.
What's
the actual outcome of this study? What's the deliverable?
Well, it's all summarized in those reports right there. But in a nutshell, we want to be able to compare conditions in 2018 to conditions in 2005 when that original data was collected. And we want to try to use the information to identify some meaningful outcomes. You know, how do we move the needle in Rapp County? And then we also want to be able to follow up on this effort in something that we can do ourselves. So we don't have to go out and pay a consultant. We have something set up that we could continue to collect this data and be able to continue it on our own.
So okay.
Those are kind of the main objectives.
Thank you.
So we never ever got a presentation other than from Tim Winter last time this was done.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, whether this is all voodoo science and, you know, who comes up with all this stuff and the rest. And so, I would really, you know, again, I think it's great that we're having the base, started with a baseline and coming up with a follow-up trend and the rest, and we can use our own. But again, it would be kind of nice to, you know, whether you guys have some time or when you're in town to come show how the report's done and how they come up with the numbers and the modeling. I'm sure they use computer modeling for all that stuff and how they, you know.
Without looking in detail here, do they give a presentation? Is that part of their
scope of work? I can't recall if that's part of the scope of work. I'd be surprised if it isn't.
I would think so, too.
And I'll follow up on it.
And it could be even with the city. I mean, you could give a presentation altogether.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
I think that'd be great.
Okay.
What'd you say the number was? I'm sorry.
047.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve Resolution 2019-047, a resolution appropriating additional sums of money to increase expenditures in excess of amounts budgeted in the General Fund Environmental Health Operating Budget, specifically $5,000.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Who else wants to sign this?
You already signed the resolution.
Well, there's two county.
Yeah, you know, I got that. Yeah.
Do you have the resolution document?
Yes.
Oh, it's in there too. Yep. Sorry. Excuse me.
Thanks.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. See you later.
See you later.
Thank you.
So we are hearing from the clerk and recorder's office on a request to close the office on July 29th and 30th. So go ahead.
Great. So I'm Tina Fry, the chief deputy with the clerk and recorder's office. And to accommodate the state training, there's a pretty excessive training that is being required for us to take over the vital records for the county. And a state agent is having to come in and do a in-person training to do that. And the only way to accommodate that, all of us need to be trained for that, and it is a two-day training. So the only way that we've been able to figure out to do that to accommodate the training with the state is to close the recording office down for those 2 days to the public to allow for the whole office to participate in in-person training with the state. And that'll be through the Colorado Department of Health and Environment.
And where will you do that training?
We're going to do it. I think they reserve
here.
Yeah, here. So they're coming to us. So we will be here in the building available.
It's good.
Yeah, it's easy enough.
I think it's a great thing.
And we have did a mass email out. I have contacts with all the recording companies, attorneys, lawyers, that kind of thing. So we did do an email out to all the agencies that we have to notify them and have posted notices in the office and on the front door to try to let the public aware as possible that does a lot of business with us. So.
You have a number for
me? 048.
If I could just add one thing, the office will close Monday and Tuesday of next week, and then on the 1st, which is Thursday, they will begin taking vital records and handling that service. So just to put a date to when that service will start in Brough County.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve resolution number 048-19. Resolution
2019-048.
2019-048, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
A resolution designating the clerk and recorder's office, excluding motor vehicles, as closed to the public on July 29th and 30th, 2019.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thanks very much.
Thank you. I just thought I'd let you guys know why everybody's here.
Are looking at an amendment to an agreement with Securus Technologies. So will you go ahead and just give us the overview here?
Sure. So I requested, you know, we have Securus is our phone and video provider for inmates. they provide those services. On the video monitors, I requested that we have the inmate grievances be put on there. And also they offered a...
They have to pay money for those?
A job search. Well, yeah, you know, everybody's out to make a buck. And the thing is, they didn't charge us anymore, but we had to extend our contract. We're happy with Securus. We're not looking at switching it.
I was talking more about the inmates, because they actually pay for their calls, do they not?
Oh, yeah.
And so when they have a grievance, do they have to pay for the grievance call?
No, the grievance is for the jail for us. So.
Okay.
And
I'm sure it's their right to submit grievances.
Yeah, and actually this is what has come to light. I went to that conference in Vegas this year, and they talked a lot about the Prison Litigation Reform Act, which was put into place to actually help corrections and alleviate some of the lawsuits that were going in front of the Supreme Court. Because the Supreme Court is just getting overwhelmed with all these civil suits from inmates. So they developed the Prison Litigation Reform Act, which pretty much describes if an inmate has not proven, if we can't prove that they've exhausted every administrative remedy inside the jail first, they can't sue. So that being said, is the grievance process is that administrative remedy.
Yeah.
So we have the grievance system in place to kind of protect us also from litigation, and we can use that Prison Litigation Reform Act as a defense if sued, because we can say, you know, if someone was saying their civil rights were violated while they're in our custody and they did not grieve about it, they didn't notify the staff, we can use that Prison Litigation Reform to fall back on as a defense, and it won't even go to litigation. So right now it's a paper form that they'll fill out, and then we respond to it, and we scan it and attach it to the record in the system. As you can imagine, with most paper things, sometimes issues happen, or it's left under a file for an extended period of time, and this will help alleviate.
Or you do like I do, and you scan the blank side of your paper.
Or that happens. This will alleviate operator error, I should say, and be more accountable for the grievance process. So when they file a grievance, it's electronic. There's a time stamp on it. They can't say that, oh, well, the deputies just wrote in whatever time they want. There's a time stamp on it. We can respond to it. We have an easier way of tracking it and bringing up those records in case there is litigation.
Is this a standalone piece of equipment, or is it just a computer? Or?
So it's all through their video monitor.
Okay, it's not like we're providing a separate computer for them to do this on.
Nope, it's all through their monitor.
It's in a separate room, though.
It's in their actually in their housing units.
Oh,
so they have their phone
monitor. One in each one of the
There's one in each housing unit.
Huh.
Yep. So before, they would have to request, if there was a grievance, they would have to request a grievance kite from a deputy that we would give them during medication pass. You know, this way they can file a grievance whenever they want, which I could be.
They'll probably see some additional grievances. What else are you going to do?
Right. Yeah, I don't know if I just... I backed myself into a corner with that one, but
Boyle made me feel badly this morning.
Yeah, but, so I don't know if I just opened up a new can of worms there and get 1,000 grievances a day, but this way they can do it on their own monitor. We have the inmate handbook on the monitor. We have the grievance process on their monitor. So I'm trying to go more paperless, and the Securus technologies have offered these things. And also the job search, they can go on there and look for what jobs are available if they're getting out soon, so they know what's kind of out there.
So Securus is doing this for free, except?
Except we extend our contract.
For how long?
2022, it says.
Yeah, 12 right. months to June 19th, 2022.
I'm going to guess we would have been extending it.
Regardless?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, we paid a lot of money for the video monitors. We've invested a lot in the Securus company. And they've done right by us. They've been really, really good to work with. So I don't see us going away from that company or them going bankrupt, knock on wood, or anything like that anytime soon. So that's why I want to keep building on this and get more programs on those video monitors, like the law library is something else I'm going to look into. But that costs money, so of course.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Madam Chair, I move we approve and authorize your signature on the amended agreement with Securus Technologies to add inmate forms, grievance, and job search applications.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
Dex, not Dex.
Dex.
All right. We are ready to hear the appeal for schedule number R8166599. I'll note that the petitioner is not present and remind the representative from the assessor's office that she is still, he and she are still under oath. You guys don't think I need to read this again, right? Considering that the petitioner is not here and that we have heard multiple of these today, I think we're all familiar with the introductory comments. So if the petitioner comes, I'll state those again. Otherwise, I think we are sufficiently aware of the rules. Susan, go ahead.
Okay. This property is a vacant lot located in the Sanctuary subdivision. It was originally valued at $425,000 on the mass appraisal basis. It was appealed by actually the owner at that time for the 2019 reappraisal. It was appealed. He had called in and said that it was under contract for $325,000. And they said, well, I can't really consider any sales outside of the time period, but that's a pretty big difference, $100,000, so appeal and I will take a look at it. So he did. And in the meantime, the property sold to Dex, the owner of record now. So I contacted the Division of Property Taxation. They said both parties have standing to appeal to the next level, so we're appealing this based on Dex's appeal to the CBOE. As I was saying, it was valued at originally at $425,000. At assessor level appeal, I did adjust it downward to $361,250, and that was based on the fact that it sits a little bit lower in the subdivision. I was looking at it on aerial maps at that time. It has some rocky outcroppings that will make it a little bit of a tough building site. When it was, however, appealed to CBOE level, I looked at it in person, and I also looked at a lot nearby that was also on the market at the same time. The subject property actually isn't as steep as I thought. There are some pictures on the following pages that show where the subject lot is located. There's also a map with contour lines, and you can see a roughed-in driveway there. And down in that lower section, it's, you know, a fairly mild slope. And so you could build a house down there closer to the road. You can see the actual photographs as well. The driveway has a pretty mild slope to it. And then from across the street, looking back at the subject property on Clearwater.
So the clarification on that photo that you're referring to, not that one, the next one down, yeah, the property is in front of that home, right?
Yes.
There's no home on the property currently.
There's no home.
Okay.
That home actually sits up much higher
okay.
on, Heavenly View,
yeah, different.
On Heavenly View
okay.
Road.
So
which
is this below the road?
No.
It looks like it's above the road here.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yes.
This okay. is the road up to the treatment center, water treatment.
Okay.
So this road goes to the water treatment center, and this is the rough-in driveway right here.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know
here's
exactly
where
it's
you
at.
Build,
yeah.
And then that house is actually quite a bit up higher on Heaven
okay.
View.
Thank you.
I'll show you that here. So you're looking at this house in that picture.
And the property is that 2951 right there?
2954, this one right here.
That's the subject.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
I was disoriented.
Yeah.
It was backwards.
So
got
in her
it.
Photo, you're seeing this house above it.
Okay. Thank you.
So I looked at this a few different ways on the appeal. I am looking at the fact that the subject was listed for $389,000 as of our appraisal date for a test of reasonableness on my adjusted value of $361,250. So I looked at the sales that did occur in the sanctuary during the time period. I looked at their discounts off of the list price to see what a probable sales price would be for this property. Based on those listings and sale prices, there was a range of 4% to 5% off of the list price. Using the subject's list price of $389,000, that would equate to a range of $369,550 to $373,440. And again, my value is lower than that range. I also looked at a lot 137 that was also on the market as of the appraisal date. And it was listed for $665,000, quite a bit higher than the subject property. And so I still feel that the differences between those values and the differences between those two lots adequately support the subject's current value. Overall, I've listed all of the sales in the sanctuary in the time period on the grid with the green top label. And so this subject is one of the lower priced properties, yet it's in the newer area of the subdivision. Gets a little more sunlight than, for instance, filings 1, 2, and 3 do. So based on what I have the ability to consider our time frame, I can't look at the sale that did occur in May of this year. I have no reason to lower the value below its current value of $361,250.
Questions?
So, no, just a comment is that, wow, that's a bunch of transactions in the sanctuary.
And vacant land.
Mm-hmm. So it gives you a great range of comparables, that's for sure.
Yeah. And her recommended value at that 361, you look at the final column of TAS, would put it third lowest in valuation.
Third lowest, and the fact that the first two listed there, the lowest prices, were definitely outliers in my data set, so there were some...
So what's your justification for having this property that low?
Well, just looking at the list price as of the appraisal date, you know, I'm just a little bit under that range that I was talking about, the 4 to 5% discount off the list price.
Okay.
So I feel like... You know, that's...
But you, I mean, looking at your long list of transactions in the sanctuary, you feel that this particular lot is inferior or,
you know,
less valuable because...
Well...
Location.
Location.
Would be my opinion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Location in terms of being close to the intersection.
Sets right on the intersection.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not a busy intersection per se, but it is sitting low. The building site is sitting low to Steamboat Boulevard.
Probably doesn't have good views of the ski area.
No, you can see in the first aerial where I walked up the driveway there and turned back toward the ski area, you can just barely see the top of the ski mountain.
Okay.
Presumably, you know, of course, the house would sit higher than where I'm standing. You could see a little bit more of it, but not a lot.
So was the petitioner aware of your new lower value?
That was on the NOD. He received the NOD because he bought it in the midst of our appeal season. So the original owner appealed, and then he got the NOD. And then we sent an NOD to the original owner as well, but I never heard from them.
So how much did it sell for? Not that it matters right now, sounds like.
It sold for $325,000. And I do have it.
So that would be considered in the next.
So, yeah, as I explained that to Dax, that will be a sale used in the 2021 reappraisal. The sanctuary is an area that has experienced some differing trends in the overall market,
That's odd.
It's not the premier subdivision anymore. It's just a little bit older now, and there's so many new subdivisions that have been created, and the market is kind of leaning more towards a little bit smaller, more efficient home. And so, you know, you're kind of here. You've got the bigger
neighborhoods.
And typically in the sanctuary, the lower lying lots have vegetation, trees and stuff. They're either along the creek or the golf course or something like that. And this one does not. And then the parcels above it on Heavenly View are that don't have trees, much like this one. They are elevated, tend to have really nice views in both the golf course and the ski areas. And this one just kind of falls.
Doesn't have either of those.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yep.
But yeah, the sanctuary has been a weird subdivision for us as far as land values or land sales.
Well, it's a great investment for this first guy that bought it in 2007, I see. So.
Right, and I wasn't trying to, I'm not trying to use that sale. I'm just trying to show kind of the
variability,
the market trends over time, that most places had gone back to those 2007, 2008 values for this reappraisal. But obviously the sanctuary is a little bit of an outlier in that, too.
Did you have another question, Doug?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Sorry. I'm sure turn on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Madam Chair, in the matter of account number R8166599, I move that we deny the petitioner's appeal and uphold the assessor's valuation of $361,250.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 You know what I think this parcel is going to suffer from, too, is headlights hitting on the house for a long time on that section going into it. Just something I just noticed. But $325 for that size of a lot in sanctuary is good price.
So the next one is not an appeal, is that right?
No, this is an equalization.
So we can go ahead and tell we're only a couple minutes early anyway, so I think we're all right.
Yeah, and I'll start out on this.
Okay. So I don't have a number.
Account number?
Yeah. Yes, on the communication form. Under agenda title.
Agenda
title. At the end of
there
the
is.
Title.
Oh, yep, I found it. Got it. Thank you very much. So we're ready to hear the appeal for schedule number R8173076.
It's not an appeal.
Sorry. We're ready to hear the value correction for R8173076. Thank you, Commissioner Corrigan. Go ahead and give us your information.
Okay. We're here today to request that the County Board of Equalization correct a blatant error in valuation that I discovered in the course of the May appeals. I believe late May I discovered this. The situation here is it's a residential condominium in the Olympian that is being used, got some conversion to office space, and it's being used as office space. We left it on the res commercial or the res condo model and just changed its abstract code so that it'd be abstracted to a 29% assessment rate. And at the same time, we had revamped for this 2019 reappraisal the valuation tiers on the Olympian complex. We had a total of 39 condos, I think, in the Olympian, and we had 23 valuation tiers in there. It was ridiculous.
Wow.
So I got together with my condo appraiser, Robin David, and we got that down to like 4 or 5, and we used some modifiers for floor, meeting, corner unit type thing. So what we ended up doing is deleting a lot of these land codes, or these condo codes, where the base value is set, the price per square foot. And so this got missed in our errors and everything, our error checking and stuff, because it had the old land or base code, condo base code still in it, and it wasn't showing up on the errors for the residential condo appraiser, and it just wasn't showing up in Kevin's stuff either, and it just got missed. So the result was a zero value on the condominium unit and a $53,000 value on the garage, which was mistakenly abstracted to a residential classification as well. So I believe we had a total of two or three errors on this, Kevin.
Yeah, the abstract was wrong. The count on the garage utility was wrong.
So our prior year value was nearly $700,000, $691,550, and it dropped to $53,000. So what we have here is omitted property. We omitted from the tax roll the living, or the, in this case, the office space of the condominium unit. And the only thing that was getting valued was the garage, which was also an error, which I'll let Kevin speak to.
The garage count should have been two when it was only in the system prior at one. And another thing that became apparent is that it is an attached garage space to the unit. So not only was the garage count wrong, it probably should have had an upgraded...
You mean there's a door from the parking garage?
Right into the unit.
It's not in a parking garage. It's an actual garage, unit, two-car space.
It's partitioned off.
With a man door from the garage right into the condo unit.
But it's part of the overall...
No, it's not part of the parking structure, underground parking structure.
It's a different outside structure.
Yeah, this is on the alley side of the Olympian. And there's actually two units, and Checkman actually owns both of them, that are this way. And I wasn't aware of it. It was buried in some account remarks in our system. But so this is very unique. We have an enclosed, attached two-car garage going to a two-bedroom condo unit.
To a condo.
And not a parking structure. So our value of $53,000 is based off of sales, these deeded sales that we have for downtown parking spaces inside of underground parking structure.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that is the reason we wanted to raise the grade up, or the quality of this garage space, and then we just had the numbers wrong. We had this one unit, and it's really two parking spaces.
Do the Shackmans have an opportunity to appeal this?
Yes, after you guys make the decision, they have all the opportunity to appeal.
But the reality is we're just taking it back to where it was before.
Actually, we're going below the value because we're now going to model it on the commercial model.
Yeah.
So we're looking at it on the income basis approach more so than the market value of a residential condo unit. So in the end, we're actually proposing that the total value goes to 623, which is going to be a drop from 691 the prior year that we had on the property. And we have basis for that value. Two units down in the Olympian, a commercial unit did sell. Does not have the garage, very similar square footage, and it sold for something.
Five. So the garage is part of the contract.
Yeah, and I thought we had that as part of the packet was the plat scheme. We do have it in another appeal.
This was the only unit where there were errors detected when you went back through this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because it sounds like you made a lot of changes that led to this happening.
Right. And so we created new base codes.
Right.
We call them condo base codes and moved all the accounts, at least Robin did, of these 39 units. And then Kevin's got about four or five of these commercial units, and they're done on the commercial model. And then this one, like I said, we were still valuing it under the residential model, but applying the commercial abstract code to it, so they'd be assessed at 29%. And so it wasn't on Robin's list, and Kevin wasn't in his radar to be looking at. And so it ended up having the base code had a zero value to it in the new tables. And so it went to zero value.
The abstract on it was changed back in 2016. We'd had a non-tip that this was a commercial unit. So I went out and inspected, and all I did is looked in the door, and I could see, they're using it as an office. It's still partitioned.
I've been there. I can tell you what you're using as an office.
Yeah. And so I changed the abstract in 2016. Left it as a res model because some of these tend to, they can fluctuate, go back and forth. But now with this error, it's like, let's just put it on the commercial model, and that won't happen again. So
they bought the land title building.
Oh,
next to BAP over on Oak Street.
Mm.
Oh.
So he's been.
Anyway, oh, that's side note.
So yeah. So there's two identical units in here that both have this attached two-car garage. Sheckman owns both of them.
But only one was an error.
Well, only one's used in a commercial. The other one's residential use, and we moved its base code to the new valuation tier, and it valued fine.
But only one of these, this one here, unit 208, the R817376, is the only one we need to make a motion on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Yep. 207 is fine.
Yep.
Are you ready?
Yeah, absolutely.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve the correction on account R817-3076, unit 208, the Olympian Condominiums, and move that corrections to set forth the classification of the garage spaces from 1230 residential condo at 7.15% assessment rate to 2245 commercial condo at the 29% commercial condo assessment rate, and the approve the value of $623,060 on that unit.
Second.
Any other discussion?
One other comment. I brought this up to the Division of Property Taxation and asked them what the proper procedure would be here. Do I send a special notice of value for amended property after we're through CBOE? And she said, no, this is something you would take to the Board of Equalization to equalize the assessment. And you know, this is what you guys are here for, is to correct errors.
Just so somebody sends them a notice of it. That's all we care about.
Yeah. They will get a notice that comes from your office. It will outline what the old value was and what the new value is.
Yep.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thanks very much.
And they get the full appeal rights and stuff.
Great.
Thanks.
Before we get started on the next one, I pulled one of the letters that your office sends out, or Helena sends out. That bottom highlighted line states that the petitioner can go online and get the assessor's report. Our submittals to the our appeal packets.
Okay, no, that's good.
Is that adequate for what you were looking for?
Well, I don't know. Probably not, but I guess we don't need to.
Well, and our appraisers
don't need to babysit them either.
Yeah, so. But our appraisers still, and you know, some petitioners talk to us, and others don't talk to us. Yeah. They don't even respond to voicemail or emails. You know, they file the appeal, and then they don't seem to want anything to do with us.
Well, and you know how it is, Gary. I mean, we're just trying to get through our part of this thing too.
Yeah.
And if they don't have an opportunity to review what the work that you guys, the good work that you guys all do, and then, well, gosh, I didn't get time to read it, and we need to read it now, and well, why didn't you do that before?
Yeah.
Anyhow.
So we got one more?
I have a 2:30, and I have emailed him, and I didn't hear back.
Someone told me he wasn't coming. Helena, I think, maybe indicated that.
Can you believe that?
Well, when you throw easy ones in the middle, then we can stay ahead of schedule. It's when you pile all the tough ones up next to each other.
I'm sorry. Angela, your schedule is open tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Right, but I'm trying to block out a half hour of time with Beth to bring her up to speed with non-integral building envelopes.
Yeah, you can hear back from me if I can do it properly.
Yeah.
So the only other one we got going right now is what, this Friday coming up?
Yeah.
Next Friday,
no,
right?
Next Friday.
Friday the 29th.
Do we have any Monday and Tuesday next week?
We do.
Monday and Tuesday?
Monday, and Tuesday, Friday. And Friday.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
And then Monday, the following Monday, the 5th, is the deadline, story deadline. Something I've been wanting to mention to you guys from my initial report to you about appeals and stuff. I was talking about the coal mine. I forgot to talk about their economic life. They had reported to us 3 to 4 years, and the prior year's reporting to us was 8 to 10 years. So they dramatically dropped that. And I had made a phone call to the local manager guy. I can't remember his name right now.
No,
great.
Claire Sollers, Pat Sollers.
Pat Sollers. was that? No, is it Pat a female? No.
He's got
all right, maybe
past the general manager.
Yeah. Kathy knows. I think yeah. General manager of operations or assistant manager, or whoever I was talking to, and he says he was part of filling out that report and stuff. And he said, yes, that is our calculation, what we believe we have left in economically viable recovery. And I said, so you're telling me that you guys right now, you're saying you could be closing your doors in 3 to 4 years? It was a very point-blank question to him. And he said, yes, that is our belief.
Wow.
And I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's disappointing that if that's really the case, that Jerry or somebody wouldn't communicate.
Well, Jerry's already flew the coop.
Oh, no kidding.
He retired.
I did not know
3 weeks ago.
Oh.
Saw the handwriting on the wall. Yeah. It's like, okay.
Get his pension while he's can.
But that's interesting because that's a much shorter timeline than the power plant.
Yeah,
and
no,
I had been thinking it was going to be the other way around. I mean, whether that's accurate or not, but.
Yeah. And so I put their.
So they've got more.
Their
they've got a whole lot more. I mean, is that based upon the fact that they don't believe that they'll have the markets, or is it based upon the fact that they're going to run out of recoverable material?
No, there's two things that they're supposed to be reporting to us. Well, they're supposed to report physical depletion, but if they don't report it, we can calculate it based off of what their current average production is and what they have as known reserves. And then that's typically what they've been reporting to us. And then this one came in at 3 to 4. I mean, so we had that conversation. And he says, no, we are reflecting in there the economic environment of coal. And we don't think beyond 4 years there's economic viability.
So what percentage of their production goes to the power plant?
I don't know.
Because, I mean, as long
it's a pretty high.
As long as the power plant's there, they've got a market.
So I think they supply all the coal to the power plant, but I think they still have a few contracts that are still sending trains out.
Right, but I was guessing that 75% of their production is going to the power plant.
Oh, I think you're totally right.
So there's still a power plant running. They've still got market.
I totally agree.
Because the surface mine in Moffat County serves, it only has the one customer to be in the power plant.
Yep.
Correct.
On the, I don't know which name of the mine it is.
That kind of hurts you.
But yeah, that whole mine has only had one customer.
So speaking of which,
well, they're not going to reopen.
A bigger power plant.
They're not going to go back and reopen whatever the creek.
Sage Creek.
Sage Creek.
Yeah, I mean, they've already shuttled it, basically.
Yeah.
So they're not going to. And then they tried to get this second layer of coal out of there, and probably,
out
I don't
Wolf
like
creek?
It, ain't going to make it. What?
Out of Wolf Creek?
Yeah, out of the Wolf Creek scene. They were on the Wedge, and now they're supposed to be on the Wolf Creek, and it must not be.
Well, no, but Gary's saying it's not the issue of them not being able to find the coal or produce it. Now.
Yeah, it's not the physical reserves. It's he is calculating in the economic environment.
Speaking of which, you guys have any particular questions you want me to ask the guy from Tri-State on Thursday? I'm going out to that meeting at the Craig Station.
That's right. It's the Tri-State coal mine or power plant with the three units. One's being shut down with that surface mine that feeds it.
Kalawab.
Is that Kalawab?
Yeah.
That's just one.
And Trapper.
Trapper
and Kalawab.
Yeah, Kalawab's off of 13
right.
South.
Trapper's closer.
So it's Trapper's is the one that serves that power plant.
Right.
And that's the only customer for the mine. Yeah.
But that's all that Kalawab serves, too. Kalawab only serves Tri-State, too.
Really? They don't have any other markets?
No, they don't. They haven't brought any coal past my house. Years.
Well, I've noticed the trains have really dropped off.
Did you read this article?
Here through town in the last 3-4 months.
The other day?
After it seemed like they're picking up.
I thought that was interesting.
It's like,
could be. What,
I thought it was
I don't
interesting.
Know.
I can't remember last train I saw go through with coal.
Well, those are all coming from 20 miles, so.
Yeah.
So
answer your question about Tri-State. No, I don't have anything. I guess it'd be interesting to know what they're going to tell. Because
there was a long article in the Colorado Sun about
them moving to renewable energy.
Yeah.
So why the EA?
We should probably get started.
Why the EA buys most of their power from Exxon?
Yeah, from PSCO. public service company. Okay. 85%.
And so they don't have the same kind of restrictions that DMEA had. That they,
that's a tri-state.
That's a tri-state deal that's dropped that on people.
In fact, is, you know, public service companies been championing all along with the Yampa Valley Electric with the renewable stuff, so.
So we have another sanctuary property. This one is an improved.
Yes. I'm going to open, if that's all right with you.
Are the Montanes going to be joining us?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I think Helena told me that they were not coming. We're ready to hear the appeal for schedule number R8163059. The petitioner is not present, and the representatives from the assessor's office, I remind you that you are still under oath. We can go ahead and get started.
Okay. I want to start off by saying Doug jinxed me because he was talking about the good work that we do, and I found an error in my report on my way up here earlier. I've been trying to use this new software feature that we have for the grid, and it didn't save my adjustments that I had made, so some of the adjustments are missing in the grid in the report. So I have a corrected grid for you guys.
Okay.
Great.
It did not affect the analysis because I was looking at the right numbers. It doesn't affect the outcome of the decision at all, but it will make more sense, and it reconciles with the numbers that I have summarized in my report.
In the narrative.
Yes.
So this is a corrected version of what's in the packet, Doug?
My agenda packet just fried, so here we go.
That's what happens when we don't get lunch break. You can't charge your computer.
You have one.
All right, go ahead and give us the overview here.
Okay, so this is an improved property in the sanctuary on Aspenwood Lane. The property's valuation is $2,378,640. This valuation was denied at, or the appeal was denied at assessor level appeal. The petitioner had submitted sales outside of the appraisal date of June 30, 2018. At the second level, he did supply sales from within the correct time frame, but failed to adjust them for the changing market conditions during that time. And we are using the same comparables. Actually, he had submitted one that was much superior, and I did not include that in my analysis because it just didn't need to be there. And I have emailed to the petitioner with information about the time framing requirement, as well as the fact that I wasn't using that sale. Also requested to view his property, but I did not hear back. So the a brief description of the property, it's a 4-bedroom, 5-bath home on Aspenwood Drive. It has a rather large basement, so its actual square footage is 6,277. We use an effective area of 5,371 to account for part of that being a basement. The notes in the account from the new construction file, it has a media room, gym, office with sliding barn door, library, pool room, wine storage, custom cabinetry, wine bar, wet bar with a refrigerator, sink, and dishwasher. The garage has a sink and a dog wash area. It's a pretty custom home. So you'll look at the corrected grid that I have just given you, which has all of the adjustments. And really looking at that first comparable, it's just two doors down from the subject property. After adjusting, so I guess I need to look at the correct grid. After adjusting it just a little bit for square footage, and effective year built, and garage and bathroom count. Its indicated value is $2,342,932, very close to what I have the subject valued at. So I'm really relying heavily on that one. The rest of the comparables all fall within the range of that, and I believe that the subject's value of $2,378,640 is supported by these sales.
And then going back to the evidence that he presented, those sale prices were outside of the
at the first appeal level, the sales were outside of the period. At the second, at the COE appeal level, we have use the same comparables, except for one that he had submitted, which is very superior and just didn't need to be. It supports a higher value for his property, so I just didn't even include it because I didn't want to go there.
So his error was in not accounting for the time adjusted sales price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm good.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I would move to deny the petitioner's appeal for a lower valuation and uphold the assessor's valuation at 2,378,640. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Gosh, we're done with BOE?
So we're considering a contract to buy and sell Carey property. Will you give us some information here, Linnea?
Yep. So this would be to approve and authorize the signature on a contract to buy and sell real estate. This actually acts as the offer to buy it after, if it's approved today, then the town of Oak Creek would sign it, and it would be a full contract at that point. It's my understanding the town of Oak Creek has already authorized a signature on it. The property is, I'm referring to it as a Garrity property. It's about 8 acres. The administrative approval for subdividing this property from the larger parcel has already been approved by the planning department. That portion of the larger, the whole thing would be bought by the town of Oak Creek, and then they would sell us this 8-acre parcel. It is contemplated that that would be done at a simultaneous closing. Right now, it's my understanding the closing is contemplated for mid-September. You may note that there are, it is a standard form contract that we used. There are deadlines. I would note, however, I wouldn't expect a lot of additional disclosures or documents being provided to us because the town of Oak Creek has indicated they've provided us pretty much all they have regarding the property. So, but those objection deadlines would still be in effect to allow us to object if we have any issues with what we've gotten.
Including an inspection of the property.
Correct. That is something that can be done. The objection, the inspection deadline is August 19th. So any inspection would need to be completed by that time.
So
if we chose to.
Correct.
And how does that affect the, have we still preserved the ability, if we so desire, to seek out an environmental assessment?
Yes, by that, it would have to be completed by that deadline
so
that we can state our objections so that the town of Oak Creek would have the opportunity to make any remedy if we had an objection.
So that's implicit in the inspection clause?
I would say it's express.
Okay.
In the inspection clause.
I mean, I know the inspection clause is express, but is the possibility of an environmental assessment expressly stated in the contract?
Yeah, it's
okay. But other than the fact she's saying right now that it would have to be completed
correct.
By the
August
15th.
If we chose to.
Well, we have to voice our objections.
Right. So the
after with
so we'd have to do the environmental assessment prior to that day and have the results of it if we chose to.
To be clear, we would need to have the inspection completed by the 19th,
yeah.
And then they would have till the 3rd to result September 3rd to make any resolution of objections that we had.
So inspection, I assume, you guys have walked the property at least, have we not?
I personally haven't.
But PCS or whatever.
Yeah, and the inspection.
I mean, when we see it from the road.
It's not like a house where you find out the foundation is cracked or something. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I think other than an environmental assessment, we would probably struggle to come up with a valid reason to terminate the contract based upon an inspection of the property.
So do we own to the center of the road, or is this the center of the road discussion?
So the center of our road.
Or is there the center of our road? Do we own it to be simple, or do we own the easement on it?
We would own the property in fee simple. I do realize that, but I should know that. It notes that the it is not to the center of the road. It is a meets and bounds description.
Who are we to assume the road collapses on top of us?
Say what?
All right, you guys are getting punchy. Come on. Get it together. We're almost done. You can make it.
We're punchy. We're definitely punchy.
Up here.
I don't care.
I want to make this motion.
Absolutely. Please do. So I guess, and we can make it up. I think this is we don't know exactly what this property is worth, and it's probably worth a little. We're paying probably a little bit more than what the property might be worth in an actual appraisal amount. But noting that the proximity to our county road and bridge shop, and I guess that's been my interest that we'd end up having a little bit of expansion room in the direct area where the road and bridge shop is, and so a perfect opportunity to move this forward.
I agree. I think that the value of the property to Route County exceeds the appraised value.
You should have seen how excited all of those guys were when Tim mentioned that we were looking at doing this.
Is that right?
They're already making plans. We can move. We know how to flatten things out. Don't
maybe
worry.
Maybe the barriers. He didn't need to move the barriers.
Madam Chair,
go ahead.
Madam Chair, I would move to approve and authorize your signature on a contract to buy and sell real estate, which is the 8.66 acre parcel in Oak Creek.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 So, clarify, you said in.
I just was just going to second guess myself. It's not actually in Oak Creek.
We're buying it
from the town of Oak Creek.
Thank you. Yeah. Very good. Are we off?
Yep.
Sure. Are talking about the Elk River Bridge replacement.
Yes, we are here to request the Board of County Commissioners approve the award and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order to Precision Excavating for the amount of $429,027.14 for the Elk River Bridge replacement project. This is a little challenging. As the bid came in quite a bit higher, even though we did go out to bid to 21 vendors, we had four different vendors show up for the pre-bid meeting. It was actually a full room, and we only received one bid. We have, in order to fund this project, we have taken money from budgeted Cow Creek culverts and Bear River Bridge replacement, and we're going to put that out for 2020. So we have an approved budget combining those funds of $435,000, so we are within budget for this project, and this one is the most critical to get done in 2019. And I think we were up here explaining this too, but we feel comfortable that we can push off the other two projects to next year.
Do you want to add anything?
So we didn't have any budget at all for this bridge?
No, we did. But it was shattered by the one bidder, the one response.
Shattered.
What
did we have in there?
It looks like you're using all the money from Cow Creek and from Red River as the sole source of funding, which indicates to me that there was no budget for this bridge originally.
You don't have that on your list.
Originally, we had it as for 2019 that we were going to replace the Bear River Bridge, Cow Creek culverts, and the racetrack culverts down by Hayden.
Okay, so there was no money in the 2019 budget.
Right, it was for the racetrack culverts because the County Road 44 continuously developed sinkholes, and we had a bigger sinkhole at the beginning of this year. At County Road 44, and the racetrack culverts could have gotten pushed for that. So we used the money for the racetrack culverts. They're all in the same design.
We actually only use these two.
Yeah,
the racetrack culverts is still out there for.
Yeah, I thought we had budgeted for 44 and County Road 7 during
the
2000s this year's budget.
We did.
19. So he's asking how much money did we put in there? Now it's coming back at 427.
We had $250,000.
For all three sets? For the 250 for the... Okay.
That's for the Elk River Bridge.
Yeah.
250 was budgeted.
185 was budgeted for Bear River.
Got that.
250 was for Cow Creek, but we're going to push Cow Creek because that needs more than just let's open up the road and add, 348 inches. So we're going to take some of this money from here, and we're going to have Cow Creek designed yet this year to replace next year.
So the communication form is not exactly correct in terms of the funding source.
And then we've got the racetrack culverts that were in there as well. And then I had money in for just in case for major bridge repair because we were going to. When I budgeted for major bridge repair in early 2019, it was for the deck on the Clark Bridge. But then we got our inspection results back in February of this year for that, and said it wasn't mandatory to do the major bridge repair or the deck replacement for 2019. For this year, but just to continuously monitor it.
I guess my real interest is that there's money that's going to be pushed from 2019 into 2020 for the Bear River Bridge.
Correct.
But just to clarify, there was some money budgeted for the Elk River Bridge replacement, just not enough to cover it.
Correct.
And the two funding sources listed on the communication form are where the additional funding will
correct.
Come from.
Except
okay.
the two funding sources that are listed on the form are enough to pay for the entire bridge. They're not an addition.
Right.
Right.
That's enough money to pay for the bridge.
Right. Okay.
So the big question I have, excuse me, I'm trying to get my agenda working again. But anyhow, so the...
You can look at mine if you want.
That's all right. So don't we have... what's this going to do to our road and bridge and our bridge model? Were these included in our pools, these mid-length structures? Mm-hmm. So we just blew the hell out of our... this one bridge, we will potentially blow our pool budget on our pool project concept on all of these mid-sized bridges?
Not all of them. Well, the three that we planned for replacement this year. Because we got... And then the Bear River Bridge. So the Bear River Bridge got pushed as well because...
But I'm...
Moving out into the future...
Yeah, to Doug's point, when you look at our minor structure fund balance...
Which we'll look at.
If we budgeted 200 and are going to be 400,
and so
we can do half as many bridges with the same...
Yeah,
exactly.
So I just want to make...
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And reality is reality. So we're not going to... I appreciate us moving forward. I drive that thing with a haul and blow the haze over here real shortly. So I'll be knocking the bottom out of it. So, but anyhow,
please don't.
Give us a few months.
Be able to adjust all of our future cost projections based
correct.
On these costs.
Exactly. And looking back at the designs, and going back to the drawing board and seeing where we can.
Yeah.
So that money that is left out of the, out of the total that Mike has here is $785,000, and we're going to be going back to do some more design work for the future projects.
decide all you want to. It's going to cost what it costs.
No, and we're going to really look at the engineering estimates on things. And
no, I agree. And, you know, I think we're all seeing it. Kevin saw it, you know, and at the airport. So I think we're seeing it, and I think we're hearing about it out there. And in the hinterlands, nobody can get any work done. I mean, everybody's busy, and if they're going to throw you a bid out, it's going to be, it's big.
Yeah. If we get it, we'll do it.
And the telling thing is this isn't just the one off. It's not like only this one came in high. The Bear River
came in
the same ballpark, over 400,000.
So. With a different bidder.
Yes.
With a different bidder.
Yeah.
Let me just put in some Fords.
And the interesting thing is that the people that we always see submitting bids are too busy to submit bids. So, you know, I mean,
yeah,
you know, only getting one bid on each project was really surprising to us.
Yeah.
So. But we're good. We're going to go forward with this.
Madam Chair, I move we approve and authorize the county manager to electronically sign the purchase order for the two Precision Excavating Inc. for the amount of $429,027.14 for the Elk River Bridge replacement project.
Second.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
What are you hauling hay?
Say what?